Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient.
All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday, 312-981-7200. And we're here until 4 o'clock, and it's Tuesday now, but it'll be Wednesday at midnight. We're here every weeknight, late night, early morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. keeping you company throughout the morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Coming up on the show, Dr. Robert Marks is going to join us. He is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. He hosts a podcast called Mind Matters, and he's got a new book called The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue Development of Lethal AI. And we're going to talk about artificial intelligence and how he feels that there should be more artificial intelligence and robots and weaponry used in the military. It's fascinating stuff, and we'll talk about artificial intelligence. We got a lot of tech stuff on the show this morning, because coming up after 1 o'clock, we will be joined by Ian Schur. Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET.com, a great tech website, and we've got a whole bunch of tech stories to talk with him about. Ian is a terrific guy, and it's always great to talk with him. And Ian, he and his wife just had a baby. So we'll talk about that as well. But Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET.com for Tech Talk. That's going to be coming up as well. We are also going to talk about 15 music careers from celebrities that we didn't know about. They had music careers. There are a couple of new hats available. Tom, you pointed this article out. It was in the Trib. And it's Chicago Sox and Cubs hats that we'll tell you what they look like and describe them to you and why they exist. and much more. 312-981-7200. We'll talk about Ben Jerry's got a new flavor out. We'll talk about movie snacks and more. We'll have an edition of Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion is a little contest game that we do, where Tom will read a news headline, and you have to figure out whether it is a real headline or from The Onion, The Onion being a fake news website that is satirical and meant to be very funny and often is hilarious. But the real news today is so strange that sometimes you can't tell whether it's a real headline or an onion from the headline from The Onion. So you call in. And you figure out whether or not it's a real headline or an onion headline. You just say real or onion, and you win. That's how it works. Blackhawks, exciting game. They sent it to overtime, but they ended up losing. But we'll play the Blackhawks Express every morning after a Blackhawks game. The night before, we will play the Blackhawks Express. So that's all the stuff that's going to be on the show this morning. We always want to hear from you. You are the most important thing. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcasts. If you can't listen live, every single second of every single show is podcast. And you can go to iTunes or anywhere, wherever you get to your podcasts, and you can go to WGNRadio.com and check them all out. It's easy. It's free. You subscribe and the podcast will automatically be sent to your device and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there's what's going on. let's officially say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very good. Yeah. Feeling good.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Got the coffee in me. Feeling spry.
So now that little device thing that you're drinking out of, what is that?
It's basically a thermos, but it's got this handy little button, and it's an auto seal. So when I'm not pressing it, nothing comes out. No liquid.
Wow,
no liquid
you just
out.
Turned it upside down.
Yeah.
You could have had a coffee disaster.
I could have been covered in coffee. Not so, sir. Not so. And it's also got a little lock on it. So say I want to throw this in my backpack, but I don't want that button to get pressed accidentally.
Yeah.
I can push as hard as I want.
And
it's
no-
locked.
Wow.
No coffee. I'm
so
on my head right now.
You have it tipped upside down over your head. You
I'm
could be
it.
Scalding your skull right now.
Nothing.
All right. That's a handy dandy little device.
I think I got it for like a tenner.
Yeah, where?
At Ross. Ross Dress for Less.
What?
You never been to Ross?
No.
Oh, it's great.
What do they sell? There's devices?
Oh, man. It's a little bit like a TJ Maxx or a Marshalls.
Oh, okay.
So you get brand name stuff for cheap.
Do they still have, like, Sharper Image? Is that still a thing?
The I think they might have gone out of business and then bounced back. I don't know.
Because you go in there and you sit in vibrating chairs and you look at weird radios and stuff. I always thought the Sharper Image was a fun place. I never bought anything.
Yeah, no, never
bought
anything.
You go in there and play around with all the gadgets and sit in the vibrating chairs and, you know.
Hey, you could get the foot massage, but then you walk, or like a Brookstone, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's another place. Yeah, the Brookstone. Absolutely.
Never buy anything from there.
Yeah.
But you check out the little massagers and different weird things you can buy.
So how much coffee do you drink in the course of a show?
Course of a show, this is about two cups.
We do a five-hour show.
We do a five-hour show, yes.
Right. So you do just two cups?
About two cups in here, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you don't, like, refill it during the...
Nope.
No.
Rest of the, I like to have this. I've got a little water bottle as well. Keep hydrated.
Yeah.
You know?
I drink water.
Water keeps you awake.
Well, I drink water. I drink a lot of water.
It's good. Yeah.
Not just during the show, but like at home.
Well, that's why you have such a glowing, beautiful skin.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. So, well, all right. There it is. Tom will be awake. He's got the caffeine going. He's got the coffee, and he won't spill any of it because of his little handy dandy gadget that he's got. So, all right. It's the Nick DeGilio Show underway and continuing on 720 WGN. Thank you for listening. 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about artificial intelligence and its use in the military with Dr. Robert Marks, who is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. And he's got a fascinating book called The Case for Killer Robots. And we'll talk all about that and AI here on 720 WGN, and we want to hear from you, 312-981-7200. The Nick DeGilio Show continues.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel.
Nick DeGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 a.m., 312-981-7200. Is the phone number. After the 1 o'clock news, we'll be joined by Ian Schur, who is the editor at large at CNET.com, a great, great, great tech website. And speaking of tech, my first guest is Dr. Robert J. Marks. And Robert is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence, and he's got a new book called The Case for Killer Robots: Why America's Military Needs to Continue to Develop Lethal AI. And we're talking with Robert about that, and we continue right now. Dr. Robert, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you, Nick.
Yeah, so we thank you for doing this, and tell me a little bit about the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence, of which you are the director.
Well, first of all, I am also a professor. I'm a distinguished professor at Baylor University, but I also direct the Walter Bradley Center. It's about a year and a half old, and it was founded about a year and a half ago with the general idea of celebrating human exceptionalism and also kind of pushing back on some of the hype that's associated with AI. You just talked about the fake headlines from The Onion versus real headlines. There's a lot of fake headlines out there about AI because I think a lot of people that talk about AI really don't understand AI. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the purposes of the center, is to kind of push back on that.
And how many people are involved in the center?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. We have a website, mindmatters.ai. We have a couple dozen people that are actually writers there and contributors of news and other things. We're associated with Discovery Institute out of Seattle, Washington, and we're one of their centers. They have a number of different centers, and so we have the entire infrastructure there that helps us out.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you first start getting interested in artificial intelligence?
I have been doing research in artificial intelligence for over 30 years.
Wow.
I'm an old guy. There were actually three different waves of artificial intelligence, one in the 60s, one kind of in the 90s, and then there's this new wave coming in right now. And I got involved in the 90s, so I've been involved for quite a long time.
Okay. Well, tell us about these three waves that you mentioned, Doctor.
Well, the first one was in the 1960s, and there was a guy named Bernie Woodrow at Stanford University that came up with a neural network that did incredible things. And his technology was actually used later in line equalization. I don't know if you remember the old faxes.
Sure.
Were used to dial up, and it sounded like a duck choking on a kazoo. But that was Bernie Woodrow's neural network equalizing your line in order to get better communication. But Bernie Woodrow also used this was in the 1960s now. He could take spoken commands, have them typed out. He used his neural network to forecast the weather. He used his neural network to train and play blackjack, and it actually performed up to the theoretical limit. And he was just doing incredible things back in the 1960s. There's a great documentary on YouTube that describes some of his work. But as what happens, there's politics in academia and research, as everywhere else, and there was kind of pushback from people that didn't like neural network sort of things. So there was kind of an AI winter until the 80s. And in the 80s, there was a brand new rush. There was an evangelical guy named John Hopfield out of Cornell University that went around telling everybody about neural networks. So there was a big resurgence.
Yeah.
And then as of late, modern, they have all of these news headlines. It's a little bit old, but you have things like Deep Blue winning at chess. You have AlphaGo, which is an astonishing program today, beating the world champion at Go. And Go makes chess look like tic-tac-toe. I mean, it's a really, really difficult game. And it was kind of the gauntlet that everybody in AI was searching for. So that's been done. And so that captured the imagination of the media. And there was a lot of extrapolation and fake news.
Yeah, wow.
That came with it. So those were the three periods.
Wow. And it's Nick DiGilio's show here on 720 WGN, and we're talking with Dr. Robert J. Marks, who is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. His book is called The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs the Continued Development of Lethal AI. Tell me about the book.
Well, the book is actually it's a pushback partially from people that want to ban killer robots. There's actually an organization called Human Rights Watch, which has the campaign to kill killer robots. The UN Secretary General came out and said killer robots are terrible, and we should make a bunch of international laws to ban them. And so there's been a lot of pushback, but one of the things I think a lot of this pushback against killer robots is made without an understanding of what AI does. And if history teaches anything in the military, to remain competitive, the U.S. military needs to respond and adapt to new warfare technology. Because if you look in history, it's the technology which really helps win wars, shorten wars, and sometimes, for example, in Reagan's SDI, kind of prevent wars. SDI ended the entire Cold War without firing a shot.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's, yeah, no, go ahead.
So, yeah, so it's a pushback against that. And on the other side, we have people like Andrew Yang, who's running for president on the Democratic side, saying the U.S. is losing the arms race. We have a bipartisan National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence that put out a report in November 2019, which said basically the same thing. We're catching up. The Trump administration has done some very nice things at that. But the report ended, and it says we've got to get this right. It's not optional. And the United States adversaries are really doing incredible things. Vladimir Putin has said whoever controls AI in the future is going to control the world. And he meant probably economics, and if we know Russia, that meant military. Mainland China is putting $30 billion into artificial intelligence.
Wow.
Their goal is to be the dominant artificial intelligence force in the world in a few years. And you know that much of that is going to go into military sort of operations.
What falls under the umbrella of killer robots?
Well, it's any weapon that has artificial intelligence in it. And artificial intelligence, I guess, is the most general definition you can have. It's anything involving computers that when you look at it, you kind of go, wow, I think that that's currently the definition of AI.
Mm-hmm.
But we've actually had autonomous killer robots for a long time. So the actual AI has very little to do with the container in which it's in. So you can actually talk about artificial intelligence and humanoids, sort of transformer robots, but there, it's also involved in missiles, autonomous underwater vehicles. The military uses a lot of AI, for example, in image recognition, target recognition. And so its application is all over the place. And a killer robot, I guess you would define as anything that involved artificial intelligence that was lethal, that could actually kill people.
Okay, that's fascinating. How can people get your book?
Well, like everything else in the world, it's available on Amazon.com.
Right.
And there's a Kindle version, there's a print version, and we will soon have a audio version of the book also.
Okay. I have many more questions about artificial intelligence, Doctor, and I'm going to ask them to you as we continue our conversation. Dr. Robert Marks is with us. He is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. He's also the host of Mind Matters podcast. We'll talk about that and more AI conversation. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Talk and text, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 4 a.m., and we will be joined by Ian Schur, editor-at-large from CNET.com. He'll join us after 1 o'clock. What right now, though, we're having a conversation as we continue. Dr. Robert Marks is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. His latest book is called The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue to Develop of Lethal AI. And Robert, one of the things that I notice now is that there are so many that AI is in so many homes now. With your smart speakers and your other devices that are in the home, are people now accepting AI more?
Well, I think actually the artificial intelligence is so with us that we're kind of numbed by the familiarity. If you think of things like Alexa, like you were mentioning, and Uber, Google Maps, even Netflix, Amazon Shopping, Bitcoin, Dragon voice recognition, even Wikipedia and Skype all use sort of a type of artificial intelligence as we have defined it. So, yeah, it's here. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's ubiquitous.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we were numbed by it. I think it's also something we take for granted now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For example, my cell phone, gosh, I didn't have it a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody had a cell phone, and now we can't imagine life without it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true.
Let me ask you this. High-tech weapons are out there already. How did they help win wars, and like historically?
Well, historically, let's go to World War II.
Yeah.
You had things such as the Norden bomb sight, which improved the accuracy of dropping bombs. The Norden bomb sight was actually kind of cool AI, because what it did is it measured a bunch of environmental parameters like the wind speed. It actually took over control of the plane, and it decided when to drop the bomb.
Wow.
And this was all done by a so-called analog computer back in World War II. We also had radar, and radar was a big secret until the win over Japan, when the U.S. released all the information about radar. But that was a big secret, and this is an interesting historical story, that the Nazi pilots didn't know how the Americans were actually seeing through fog and actually shooting down their planes. They didn't know about the radar.
Wow.
And so the U.S. was kind of cool. They did some good propaganda, very wise propaganda, and they released, they leaked it, that the U.S. pilots were eating more carrots. And that's
is that real? For real?
Yes, it's for real. Look it up. I read it on the web, so it must be true. So even today, we associate eating carrots with better eyesight.
Absolutely. Oh, man, that is funny. So
anyway, we had those things which helped win World War II. There was Alan Turing. This was the topic of the movie The Imitation Game.
Right.
Where he helped crack the Enigma code. And that was technology that helped win and shorten the war. And then it's terrible, but it's true. The atomic bomb shortened the World War II by quite a bit.
Yeah.
I had an uncle that was in the Pacific Theater. He was supposed to jump behind enemy lines of the Japanese version of D-Day with 24 pounds of explosives attached to each leg. And it was basically a suicide mission.
Oh, man.
And it saved his life, and the bombs took out, I think, 220,000 Japanese, which is terrible. But there's a historian here at Baylor, Philip Jenkins. He estimates that probably without the atomic bombs, it would cost the lives of 10 million people. Not only the army people, but Japan was all within Korea. It was all within China. And there were standing orders, for example, in the internment camps that in case of Allied invasion, they were to kill all their prisoners.
Oh, man.
So you know, you hate to think about it. It's the lesser of two evils, but those are examples of technology winning, shortening wars.
Mm-hmm.
A place where it prevented war. I'm old enough. I was at the University of Washington when Ronald Reagan came out with the Strategic Defense Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I had a number of liberal colleagues at the time that said, "I want nothing to do with the Strategic Defense Initiative. It has to do with war. War is bad, and I want nothing to do with it." I had another viewpoint, got a very nice grant from the Navy, helped, I think, contribute to it. And my friends were wrong, because when Reagan went to Reykjavik and talked with Gorbachev, Gorbachev says, this SDI scares the bejeebers out of me. And he went home, and Russia was afraid of the economics, that they couldn't keep up with this research, and it was instrumental in ending the Cold War without a shot being fired. So that's an example of technology which wasn't even developed.
Right.
Helping to stop a war without any fight at all.
Yeah. We are talking with Dr. Robert Marks. It's the Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN. So what kind of robots or what kind of technology and AI do we see in the battlefield now?
Well, I tell you, some of the stuff is kind of old. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Of something that Israel developed about 15 years ago in 2004. It's something called a Harpy missile, and it's an anti-radiation missile. And you can think of it best by going back to World War II, where they used to shoot machine guns, and every fifth round was a tracer bullet so that the shooter knew where his bullets were going. But it was a two-edged sword, because the target also knew where the bullets were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is kind of the way that the Harpy works. It is launched, and it patrols around, loiters, they call it loitering, around a predefined kill zone, and just kind of waits for something to happen. As soon as it's illuminated by radar, if that radar comes from the kill zone, the Harpy missile zeroes in on where the radar is coming from and goes down and takes out the radar installation. And this can be done totally autonomously, without any human intervention.
Mm.
And we've had this technology for about 15 years. And the U.S. has a bunch of equivalent sort of missiles that do exactly the same thing. They're called anti-radiation missiles.
And that's just part of what's out there in the battlefield now.
Yes, yes, that's what exists right now.
Okay. And what will we see in the future, you think?
Well, I tell you, the thing that kind of gives me chills are swarms of drones that are controlled by artificial intelligence that might be autonomous. Mm. Swarms actually have a very long, deep history in the military, but they're so robust. If you go kick down an anthill where you have a swarm of ants, for example, and you spend the afternoon stomping all the ants, you go back and in a week and that anthill is built again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a characteristic of swarms. So if you have a swarm of, if you will, killer robots, which are attacking you, and you take out a half of them, maybe even 90% of them, you can still let some of them through and do their damage. And this is the sort of stuff in the future that we need to be aware of. And how do we actually countermeasure this sort of attack?
We are talking. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Dr. Robert Marks is my guest. And his book is called The Case for Killer Robots. What about training the military once this, you know, when we bring in new AI, when we bring in more killer robots and more artificial intelligence, what's the training like for the people who are in the military?
Well, that's a good question. I think that actually anytime you bring in new technology, it's going to be training. I think this is going to be probably the future of the workforce in countries that adopt AI.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Joe Biden said everybody has to go back and learn to code again. No, they don't have to go back and learn to code again. But what they do need to do is they know how to operate the artificial intelligence and be trained in how to do it. And that's going to be in the workforce and the military. Now, the military has a very low ceiling. They actually want their weapons to be GI proof, which means that people with room temperature IQ can operate them. But of course, you have your specialists, and these specialists probably need to be trained. For example, the drone that took out Soleimani.
Yeah,
I'm sure that the pilot that was controlling that, who was very far removed from the actual drone that found Soleimani, they illuminated him with a laser and took him out with a Hellfire missile. But all of that was done remotely. But another aspect of the future of warfare is something going to be called electronic warfare, where you start messing around with the spectrum. You start messing around with radar and communication. Imagine that drone being communicated with by the remote pilot, having its communication interrupted by jamming.
Mm.
What would happen then? Well, you either have to scrub the mission or go to a total autonomous way of finishing the mission. That probably would not be a good idea in the case of Soleimani. But these are also the sorts of things that need to be considered in the future of warfare as we get higher and higher technology.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio on the Nick DiGilio Show talking with Dr. Robert Marks. We have a listener who's calling in, Robert.
Yes.
Hello, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
All right, what's up?
Good. I was just wondering if question is Lockheed Martin and like Boeing considered an artificial intelligence like companies?
Boeing and Lockheed Martin, Robert, what do you think?
Well, I do know that Lockheed, in fact, I worked on a project in my day job as professor that is actually interested in building smart ships, where they put high technology onto smaller battleships that actually minimize the number of personnel that have to be deployed there. The biggest, most visible companies right now in artificial intelligence are people like Microsoft and Google. Google actually has some great software which they make available to the world that anybody can download and use. But both Microsoft and Google, unfortunately, have kind of a pushback to do of anything to do with the military. Both of them had these large grants from the Department of Defense, and in two cases there was a great revolt by the employees who signed big petitions and say this has to do with war and all war is bad, and because of that pushback they actually dropped out with their involvement with the DOD. So I think that, that's kind of sad. But we do have these places of Boeing and places like Lockheed that are interested in artificial intelligence. In fact, I was first introduced to artificial intelligence when I worked at Seattle by or part of artificial intelligence, specifically evolutionary computing, by an engineer at Boeing. He used to come out, and we used to have lunches together, and he explained me lots of things which were going on there. And they actually used one of the first artificial intelligence applications back in the 90s and for sorting all of the different parts that they had. It didn't go into a weapon, but it was in parts maintenance. So, yeah, these places know artificial intelligence, and they know how to apply it.
All right. Dan, thank you for your call. 312-981-7200. We'll continue with our conversation here. Dr. Robert Marks is the author of The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue Development of Lethal AI. Fascinating stuff. And we'll continue the conversation here on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN continues here on WGN, and we are talking with Dr. Robert Marks, who is the director of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. His latest book is called The Case for Killer Robots, and the news is next, by the way, from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Robert.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, who develops these weapons? Is it the private sector or public sector? Where does this come from?
Well, it's probably, as Eisenhower said, the terrible industrial military complex, hopefully overseen by good and smart generals. But another place is that all of DOD has special research labs that actually work with these people. I do a lot of work for the Navy and the Army, and these are really, really bright engineers, and they know what needs to be done, and they actually interface with universities and people in industry to develop these weapons in accordance to the directions of the generals.
Oh, that's interesting. That's yeah. And how much of this is being done right now?
How much is being done with
Development of the technology?
With the development of the technology?
Yeah.
Well, there is according to this National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence report, which was in 2019, there's kind of a reluctance of some of the high brass in the military to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
There's always this inertia, if you will, and they need to embrace artificial intelligence. They need to understand that, one of the big fears is that it might be like Skynet on the Terminator,
right?
And of course, one of the things we show at the Walter Bradley Center is that artificial intelligence and computers will never be sentient. They'll never be creative. They'll never understand. They can add the numbers 3 and 4, but they won't understand what the number 3 and 4 are.
Mm.
And currently, they don't have any common sense. They get confused very, very easily.
Yeah.
That has been actually one of the downfalls of Watson. Remember IBM Watson that beat the people of Jeopardy?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what they wanted to do with IBM Watson is they wanted to go and apply it to medicine, and there's still people doing this. The idea is that there are like hundreds of papers published every day in the biomedical field, and so you're a physician, and you want to find out specifically about the case that you're working on. So you write down all the symptoms, you give it to the artificial intelligence, it goes out and retrieves all of the relevant papers. Well, this was actually contracted with MD Anderson, and IBM Watson was a big failure, and MD Anderson dropped them. And one of the problems was that they didn't have common sense. So that's one of the challenges.
It's Nick DiGilio Show here. We're talking with Dr. Robert Marks and about artificial intelligence. Tell me about Mind Matters, your podcast.
Oh, Mind Matters. Well, this is with the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence, and we actually covered all things. We're talking about artificial intelligence. There is also natural intelligence, and the way the human brain works. Is the brain the same as the mind? What are some of the implications of the brain and the way the brain works? And we actually have a neurosurgeon that is a frequent contributor to the mindmatters.ai blog, and we discover all sorts of interesting things about the way that the human mind works. We're also interested in application of so-called appropriate technology. This is technology for developing countries that don't need a better computer. They don't need the most modern gadget. They need something which is appropriate for the country at the time. And we actually celebrate and fund some of the work of people doing appropriate technology, hopefully for sustainable sort of businesses where we can go into a country, actually establish a business, have it run by the nationals, and hopefully improve their economy.
Wow.
So those it's a very broad sort of scope that we deal with in all matters concerning natural and artificial intelligence. Lots of interesting stuff there.
Okay. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. We're talking with Dr. Robert Marks, and his latest book is called The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue Development of Lethal AI. You know, you mentioned you talk about how the brain works, and this might be a sidetrack here. Have you seen a television show called Brain Games, Doctor?
I have not seen it. No.
Okay, it's a show on National Geographic, and it is it's hosted by Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele, and it is a wonderful show. It's a show where you have quizzes and tests on how your brain functions, and they give you different challenges and quizzes, and they have a celebrity on, and it was on Monday, and I watched it Tuesday morning after work. And they pitted an adult against a child to see how their brains worked in the same sort of quizzes and games that they played. And it's a really fun show. It's a fascinating show, and it's just I really love it, and I highly recommend that you should just check it out. It's called Brain Games.
Okay.
Yeah,
I certainly will.
Yeah.
Having talked to what this is another thing with that we're trying to make popular in terms of what the brain does that artificial intelligence will never do. There are things which computers can do, and it can only perform so-called algorithms. An algorithm
right.
is kind of a step-by-step procedure for doing things. Now, Alan Turing, who is a guy that cracked the Enigma code, but he was also the father of modern computer science, showed that there were certain things that were non-algorithmic, things that you could not write computer programs to do. You cannot write a computer program to have one computer program analyze another computer program in certain ways. It can't be done. It's proven. It's not questionable. It's pure math. So we need to ask the questions, are there aspects of human beings which are non-algorithmic, which you cannot write code for? This is indeed the case, and it means that artificial intelligence will never achieve these operations that people can do. Mm-hmm. This includes sentience and creativity and understanding. They look to be non-algorithmic phenomenon. And so, therefore, when you have places like Skynet and the Terminator movie that become self-aware, according to the non-algorithmic aspects of becoming self-aware, that is not going to happen.
Mm.
So this really gives a sober view of artificial intelligence, and as we go forward with development of artificial intelligence, both in the military and in the private sector, this will give us a better idea of what the limitations are.
Okay. Doctor, fascinating talking with you. Great stuff. And The Case for Killer Robots, Why America's Military Needs to Continue Development of Lethal AI is available anywhere you can get books at Amazon. Doctor, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Nick. It was fun.
Okay. Dr. Robert Marks, everyone. And check out the Mind Matters podcast. Really. Okay. Really interesting stuff. All right. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, and we continue.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was set in the pace? That story is true. I'm
right.
Say,
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? That is, you request any artist, any song. 312-981-7200. Who requested that? Was that a Wild Card Wednesday?
Yeah, a little Wild Card Wednesday coming to us from Scott in Streamwood. It's Hot Rod Lincoln by Commander Cody.
Commander Cody, yeah. All right. We're here on 720 WGN, and coming up after 1 o'clock, our good friend Ian Schur, editor-at-large from CNET.com, one of the best tech websites out there. joins us. He stops by for a monthly visit, and we talk about all things tech-related and tech news and all that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Later on, after 3:30, Know Your Onion. That's a game that we play here on the show where Tom is your host, and he will read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether those headlines are real or they are from the satirical newspaper The Onion, and they're not, and they're supposed to be comedy. And we do this game because the real world news is so crazy right now that sometimes it's difficult to tell whether it's a real headline or an onion headline. And so you call in, you guess, and you win. So that's Know Your Onion. We got a Blackhawks Express from last night's game that we are going to play back. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text anytime you want to jump in. All right, so I've already discussed many times my love of mascots in general. I just, for some reason, and I can't explain it, but for some reason they just crack me up. Do you have any opinion on mascots, Tom?
I like a good mascot here and there, yeah. You know. Really big fan of the Kane County Cougars.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzy.
Yeah.
Ozzy the Cougar.
Yep.
But I love, I grew up, you know, going to ball games and going to all sorts of different mascots.
Just ever since I could remember, anytime I see like a mascot at any game, like on the sidelines or, so, and I just crack up. I don't know what it is. But a humdinger of a mascot debuted. The Philadelphia Flyers mascot, Gritty, and people have a very strong reaction. People have a very strong reaction to Gritty. There's not a lot of people who have a strong opinion about him. He's a very weird looking. I totally acknowledge he looks insane. How would you describe what Gritty looks like to someone who's maybe never seen Gritty? And if you haven't seen Gritty, if you're near a computer, Google image, man, because you'll be very happy. Gritty.
He looks like a Muppet on cocaine.
He does, doesn't he? And he's got big orange hair all over the place. He's got big crazy eyes.
I guess would you call it like a neck beard that he's got going
on?
Yeah,
he's got like a weird neck beard thing happening.
Connects from the top of his head.
Yeah.
To his chin, all
right.
The same.
You look at his face, he looks insane. He looks like he would kill you.
Big bulgy eyes, no nose.
Yep, and he scares the hell out of kids. And then like one of the other stunts that he did like during Christmas season, he knocked out on the ice and he checked Santa into the boards, knocked Santa on his butt, threw him into the boards. Santa. So some kids are terrified. There's a video that's out there online of him skating up to the boards where a kid is crying and he starts banging on the boards because the kid in the crowd is like terrified of him. So Gritty goes up, starts banging on the boards and scares the kid even more. But he recently got into a little trouble, Gritty. He made the news. And here's a follow-up story. This is a big story. This is from CNN.com. You don't play around. CNN is covering all things Gritty.
Do you think they have a beat reporter?
Just for Gritty?
Just for Gritty. Follows him around. Somewhere around like 20 years from now, there's going to be the definitive My Life with Gritty.
Yeah.
The Gritty story.
I've got thanks to our listener, Deanna, who's just a lovely person. She sent me a Gritty bobblehead, which we have in our office. Which we have in our office. It's right next to it on my desk. It's right next to Pat Foley.
It's always terrifying to walk into that office.
Oh, it's Gritty. Gritty, Gritty, Gritty. So, Philadelphia police issued a statement saying an investigation which has been completed and is no longer active determined that the actions of the individual portraying the Flyers mascot did not constitute physical assault as alleged. End quote. Gritty's cleared. They cleared Gritty. The statement did not identify the person who was wearing the Gritty costume at the time. Chris Greenwell previously told CNN that Gritty struck his 13-year-old son, Brandon, during an event for season ticket holders at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia in November. The Flyers have repeatedly denied the claim. CNN tried Monday to reach Greenwell for comment. The Philadelphia Inquirer on Monday quoted him as saying, "I respect the police's decision, but I stand by what my son told me and what I saw, and I just want to put this behind me." Any parent would have done the same thing in the same situation. Greenwell previously told CNN that after a Christmas card photo with Gritty, the teenager tapped the mascot on the back of his helmet three times, which the father said prompted Gritty to hit his son in the back, leaving a red swollen bruise. The father, first of all, don't tap on Gritty's helmet. Why would you tap on Gritty's helmet? The father reported the incident to police and requested video footage of the incident, but Comcast Spectacor, owner of the flyers, said none existed. "We are pleased that the Philadelphia Police Department concluded there was no merit in this alleged claim," the flyer said in a statement. "The police department's statement confirms our thorough internal investigation that no evidence of the described actions ever having taken place." So Gritty is cleared. I knew Gritty didn't do it. I knew he was innocent. Oh, man. So, anyway. Now, moving into the sports area. 312-981-7200. So, I don't know if you've seen the new team describe MLB hat. So, did they do this for every... They did it for every city, right? Every Major League Baseball city?
I believe so. They did it for a few of them.
So, it's a hat that it describes the team. Not only does it have the logo, you know, on the hat, but it also has something that describes the city, like a little image that describes the city. New Era's decision to celebrate Chicago in its team describe series likely came from a good place, but the hat company didn't stick the landing. If you've not seen these things, they're ridiculous. The Cubs and White Sox, teams with classic logos and iconic brands, were included in a 10-team campaign that highlights important landmarks and popular food items in each baseball city. Customized patches are included on the front and back side of each hat. Many of the logos featured on the front of the hats are fitting. The Phillies P logo is paired with the Liberty Bell. The Yankees NY emblem is placed alongside the Statue of Liberty. And both Chicago teams were predictably assigned the city's iconic flag. Things get interesting when you turn the hat backwards as New Era shifts to a more suitable symbols. Tacos? So, Cubs and White Sox fans, what do you think of these new caps called Team Describe? In the campaign geared toward engineering geographical pride, the Dodgers hat features tacos. The Red Sox were given a lobster roll. The Giants hat has sushi on the back. Is that the iconic food of San Francisco?
I guess so. I that's not where I would place sushi.
I would have put a picture of Rice-A-Roni on the... It's the San Francisco treat.
Well, you know what's on the front is the trolley. Is the San Francisco
trolley. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. The trolley makes sense. So we got the flag and deep dish pizza.
Yeah, big old thing of deep dish.
A big slice of deep dish pizza. Clearly, different food is associated with different geographical reasons, but this is an odd turn, as any Chicago resident who hasn't experienced a pizza-stained shirt will tell you food and clothing shouldn't mix. I love they put a taco on the back of the Dodgers hat.
I can't get past lobster roll.
Lobster roll for Boston. Okay. If you've seen this, 312-981-7200. New Era also has unveiled the spring training caps that the Sox and the Cubs will wear, and they also look ridiculous. What would you put on a Sox or Cubs hat? What's your favorite uniform or logo from a Chicago sports? Shoot us a text at 312-981-7200 and let us know. We would love to. We're gonna look at the Chicago team's logos that are ranked. What's your favorite logo, your favorite uniform, and what would you put on a Sox or Cubs hat to represent the city? 312-981-7200 here on WGN. The talk continues. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're here. Did somebody request that?
Yep, Wild Card Wednesday. It's coming to us from David Monroe.
I was going to say, because we're talking sports, it was a That's a pretty good.
Well done, Dave.
All right. We're talking about sports logos, Chicago sports logos. We've got these stories about this Cubs hat, Cubs and Sox hat, that includes the flag of the city on it, and on the back, a big slice of deep dish pizza. What would you put on the Cubs or Sox hat? And then what is your favorite uniform or logo from Chicago sports? 312-981-7200. And also, so New Era is responsible for those ten hats, and they put a taco on the back of the Dodgers hat, sushi on the back of the Giants hat, and a lobster roll on the back of the Red Sox hat. And by the way, deep dish pizza for real Chicagoans, we don't eat deep dish pizza. The only time you eat deep dish pizza is maybe when your family comes in from out of town, or when a tourist comes in and they want to try it. We eat pizza. We eat thin crust pizza that's cut in squares as God intended. That's the Chicago pizza. The deep dish stuff, that's for tourists, man. You know what I mean? That's like Chicagoans don't go to Navy Pier. Unless you're going to go see an IMAX movie. That's the only time I ever go to Navy Pier is if I go to the IMAX. You don't go to... People just go, hey, let's go to Navy Pier. You don't. If you're from Chicago, you don't do that.
The fireworks.
Yeah, whatever. We could just go to the other studio and watch the fireworks.
I mean, we're lucky in that sense.
Yeah. Just go to Studio A.
4th of July.
Beautiful. Yeah, right there, right next to the windows. So New Era has done another one. They unveiled the spring training camps. So the White Sox new spring training and batting practice cap, they've redesigned it, and they've basically taken two of logos and put them on top of each other. So they've taken the Sox sort of like 80s logo with like the caricature holding a baseball bat, and they put the classic Sox logo, you know, with the writing of the Sox over it. So they've combined the two. And it looks terrible. They did the same with the Cubs. They took the classic C logo and then the actual older logo of the actual Cub crawling. And they've combined those two. They look stupid.
I don't mind the Cubs one.
The Sox one is terrible.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Sox have such a classic design.
The latest, the black hats with the writing the logo of the Sox.
Yeah, just the SOX.
Yeah, it's a classic, simple, beautiful.
Yeah, elegant in a way.
Now there was a period of time. Because I don't like the generic like baseball player holding the bat logo for the Sox. Never like that logo. Now the basic one that they have now, black cap, the Sox thing, it's great, and their uniform is great. The pinstripes and everything, it's great. But there was a period of time, and I was just informed you of this. There was a season where the Sox wore shorts. I'm not making that up. They experimented with shorts for uniform. You can look that up, Tom. It's a real thing.
Again, it's one of those searches. I'm not sure if putting Sox players in shorts is safe for the.
No, I mean it'll it's an actual thing, man. I mean, because it was ridiculous. I want to say it was the late 70s. I don't know. Late 70s, maybe early 80s. Did it pop up?
It did. Well, I think so here. Oh my.
Yeah.
That I mean, they look like kind of like rugby players, really, cuz that's kind of more like a rugby uniform.
Well, that was an experiment that they did.
My goodness.
Major League Baseball players in shorts.
It's very hip.
Yeah.
It's very of the time.
Oh, sure. It's Nick DiGilio and the Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN, and we're talking about sports logos. We got a text here. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. What would you put on a Sox hat or a Cubs hat? What's your favorite uniform or logo from Chicago sports? 312-981-7200. 630, this is Laura, she says. I think they should have a picture of Navy Pier on the front and the bean on the back of the hat for the Cubs and the Sox. Yeah, that's it. What about the Sears Tower? Or, sorry, Willis. It's always going to be the Sears Tower. I don't care. Hancock Building? What do they call the Hancock Building now?
I mean, it's just whatever the address is. I don't know what the address is. Because it hasn't been renamed yet.
It's got to be like, what, 865 North Michigan? Something like that? That's... Like, was it 865 North Michigan?
875.
875. That wasn't very far off.
Golf claps.
Yeah.
Golf claps for you. But yeah, they just refer to it as 875 North Michigan.
No, it's the Hancock Building.
Right. I mean, how else am I going to describe? Yeah, you got to go to 875 North Michigan.
It's the Hancock Building. Yeah. And it's Sears Tower. I don't care.
Yeah. I have a tough time. I have a tough time with not calling it the Sears Tower.
I still sometimes refer to it as Comiskey Park.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there's a lot of folks out there.
What is it called? Guaranteed Rate.
Guaranteed Rate. Right. The Great Guaranteed Rate Field.
Right.
Beautiful field.
I haven't been there. I can't tell you the last time I was at Sox Park.
It's a good time.
You know, when it first opened, it was terrible. When the new Comiskey opened in 1991, it was awful. But they did great renovations on it. But it truly was a terrible park. This is Melanie from Ottawa. The new hats sound like they would be put on a child's hat. I think that it should have a bear cub and the uppercase C because the cub on the front and on the back, they should have a Chicago dog, a hot dog. I don't know. I just think the food thing is weird. I mean, I know many cities that have Major League Baseball teams in them have a reputation for certain iconic foods. I understand that. But I don't know if I want it on my baseball hat.
I don't know.
I really, you know, if I were a Red Sox fan, I wouldn't wear a hat that had a lobster roll on it. I don't know. And I'm not going to wear a hat that has a slice of deep dish pizza on it.
Can I confess?
What?
I think deep dish pizza is pretty good. What I'm ordering every week.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
But.
Look. Listen, if I'm going to eat deep dish pizza, I'm obviously going to eat Lou Malnati's.
The best
deep dish pizza. There's no question. It's the best. But I don't voluntarily want to eat it. If I'm going to get pizza, I'm getting the thin crust sliced in squares as God intended.
And on the eighth day,
wait a minute. I got to mention this. Heartbreaking. Are you ready for this?
Hit me.
The best pizza place in the city is closing.
Wait, up in...
John's Pizzeria is closing.
Me. You're kidding me.
No. The best thin crust in the city. The best thin crust pizza in the city. John's Pizzeria on Western in Bucktown, closing this summer. So get your fill. Get your fill for the next 5 months. So eat up the John's Pizza. I hope they go to maybe they'll go to another location. I don't know why I didn't read why it was actually closing, but their doors are closing in the summer. It's the best thin crust pizza in the city. It's remarkable pizza, and it's been there forever. Yeah, John's Pizzeria in Bucktown on Western closing. That's just sad. So. All right, sports logos, sports uniforms for Chicago, 312-981-7200. They've been ranked here. Who ranked them? The School of the Art Institute. Okay, they ranked them. They put them in order here, and I do not agree with them. That's basically it. 312-981-7200 on 720 WGN. The talking continues.
I believed her from the start.
All right.
She said she
Nick DiGilio show continues on 720 WGN live from the Skyline Studio. Who requested the Monkees?
Monkees are coming to us courtesy of Sam. Thanks, right, Sam.
There you go, Sam. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. So they've released these new hats that have deep dish pizza on the back of them. It's a, the Cubs and Sox logos, the flag of the city, and then a deep dish slice of deep dish pizza. And they're dumb looking. The spring training caps that they're wearing look stupid. These are all new era are responsible for these. So the question is, what would you put on a Cubs or a Sox hat? What's your favorite uniform or logo from a Chicago sports? 312-981-7200. 630 says, Nick, what are you talking about with this deep dish pizza nonsense? Deep dish pizza is my reason for living here. This person was not born in Chicago. I guarantee you this person is not from Chicago and they moved here. I guarantee you. If deep dish pizza is my reason for living here, if not simply my reason for living, keep your darn no ketchup hot dogs, beef and giardiniera, et cetera. Give me a deep dish pizza, preferably cheese and sausage, but occasionally spinach now that I try to get healthier in my old age. And life is good. No, deep dish pizza, tourist.
I mean, I'm a little bit upset by the slight against giardiniera.
Oh, and hot dogs and beef.
Come on.
You kidding me?
I think that it is perfectly okay to like deep dish pizza. It's a preference. It's fine.
Yeah.
If anybody in the country does it well, it's us. It's Chicago.
Well, I mean, that's what it's. Here's the thing, though. Have you ever watched Jon Stewart talk about Chicago pizza?
Honestly, I got a little upset at that.
Oh, I was right on with him. You are absolutely right. But I do not like New York style pizza. Anybody who folds a slice of pizza is a moron. Sorry, but I loved Jon Stewart's rant about deep dish pizza. He's like, it's not pizza, it's like a lasagna.
It's like a lasagna.
It's have you seen it, right?
Oh, I've Jon Stewart,
it's fantastic. This is what years ago when he was still on The Daily Show, he went off on deep dish pizza. Can you find that? Maybe we have a little audio on that. 779 says, how about road construction signs on Chicago? That's good. That's a good one. Road construction signs. I like that. 847 says, put the Chicago skyline on the Chicago hat, but these hats sound stupid. They are. But yeah, I mean, New York style pizza, it's fine, you know, but I don't like the big floppy triangle pieces. Do we have a little bit of Jon Stewart rant?
It's not pizza. It's a casserole.
Know when I get drunk and pass out on my pizza that I'm not going to drown. You don't use an iron skillet to make a pizza. You use an iron skillet to fend off someone who tries to serve you pizza made in skillet.
It goes on much longer than that. It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
I don't know if I was a little bit offended.
Oh,
I'm just gonna say that.
I loved it.
It hurt my heart a little bit because I do love a deep dish every once in a while.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. Now, again, I'm not crazy about the New York style pizza, the big floppy, you know, you got to fold your pizza.
It's a pizza, not a taco.
You don't fold a pizza. You don't fold a slice of pizza. Now, when you get the actual, like, legendary, fantastic, thin-crust Chicago pizza, how do you feel about the middle squares?
I mean, they're great.
Well, some people hate them because there's no crust. Some people do.
I mean, I'm going to start from the outside in.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, if someone were to ask me, do you want the middle piece or a corner piece or, you know, side piece? I'll give me something with a little crust here.
Yeah.
But I don't mind that middle piece.
I love the middle
piece. Extra cheese.
I love the middle pieces. I love them.
I love you. Order a Dino's extra large. Was that that's on Montclair?
Yeah,
and Higgins, and you get the RC free.
That's the only reason RC existed.
I know, and it's the greatest
because
cola of
you
all
would
time.
get RC when you ordered a pizza. Every place, there was a time when every place that you would order a pizza from in Chicago came with an RC, came with a 1 liter bottle of RC.
And it was Royal Crown, baby.
Royal Crown Cola.
The drink of kings.
It's the Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN. We're talking about, we're talking about pizza, and we're talking about these stupid hats, team hats, that have a slice of deep dish pizza on the back of them. What would you put on a Chicago Sox or a Cubs hat? And what is your favorite uniform or logo from a Chicago sports team? 312-981-7200. So, who was this? The Art Institute did this?
Yeah, the School of the Art Institute.
School of the Art Institute.
They decided to take a look at Chicago sports logos, give their artistic opinion on it.
Okay. All right. Here's how you know you should... you gave up your life in sports and study art. You're watching Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. The Chicago Cubs are on the brink of ending a 108-year championship drought. One of the Cubs guys is up to bat, and you think, love those gloves and that top. It is this precise spirit that we will now rank all of Chicago sports teams' logos from worst to best. Okay, so here's the deal. This list is ridiculous. Can I just say that right now? This list is ridiculous. They rank six of the teams, the logos of the teams. Coming in last, at number six, are the Blackhawks, which is the best logo in sports. I mean, what are we talking about here? How do you rank the Blackhawks last?
I don't know, man.
How do you do that? It's iconic. The Blackhawks are named after Black Hawk, leader of the Sauk tribe, who led the fight against the United States in the War of 1812. You'd be forgiven for not knowing this because the Blackhawks logo looks absolutely nothing like Black Hawk. To begin with, this logo is racist. But even putting aside the fact that it exploits indigenous people for the amusement of their genocidal colonizers, it's ugly to look at.
Hard disagree.
It's difficult to know where to start with this drawing. First of all, the line weight is a mess. The thickness of the outline is nearly double the weight of the Blackhawks' nose and feathers. Starting off your logo tour of the logo's stylistic inconsistencies, how do you want to draw a feather? Pick one way. The artist had four separate shots at drawing at a feather and decided to take each one as an experiment. What is that yellow squiggle? It looks like mustard. Why is his eye so big? And why does he need to be forcibly connected to his eyebrow? Why is his mouth like that? It's practically Susian. Why is his earring on his hair? And the colors are insane. But this might oddly be the logo's one redeeming quality. Somehow the absolute chaos of literally every color except purple combines for an almost pleasing autumnal quality. Who wrote this? Let's find this person. It's absurd. I love the Blackhawks logo. It's my favorite logo. I'm wearing a Blackhawks hat right now.
Yeah.
Here it is, right there.
I actually own only one out of all the professional sports teams in Chicago. I actually only own one actual jersey, and it's a Blackhawks jersey. It's my favorite.
I've got four Blackhawks jerseys.
Oh, my God.
Well, one of them the team actually gave to me
when you shot the puck, right?
You're getting a little confused because when I sang the seventh inning stretch, they give you the hat. They give you a jersey.
They give you a jersey.
They give you a hat that says seventh inning stretch singer,
yeah.
And you get a jersey with your name on the back of it, and a box full of balls that you have to sign. Everybody who sings the seventh inning stretch gets that. I never wear that jersey because it's got my name on the back. I can't stand when people put their names on the back of professional sports teams' jerseys.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not on the Cubs. I'm not going to wear this jersey. But I have, how many Cubs jerseys do I have? I have four. So I have four Cubs jerseys and I have four.
Wow.
And I have four.
That's quite a collection.
Blackhawks sweaters. I have a Duncan Keith signed sweater. I have a Hossa sweater. That's my only away sweater, is my Hossa sweater. And then I have one with my name on the back because they sent me one, and then I just have one that has no name on the back. the Cubs. I have two away sweat. I have an away sweater from or a jersey from 93 when the logo on the front looks like it says Cuba, but it's actually Cubs. It's got that writing on the front, and it's that sort of bluish, like light blue color. Not the it's not the pinstripe. It's an away. And I've got a regular jersey with no name on it. I've got a Mickey Morandini jersey because he was my favorite Cub. So I've got, and I wear them quite frequently, actually. So, all right. First of all, they rank the Blackhawks last in the team logos, which is absurd. 312-981-7200. All right. We're talking about sports logos. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, Ian Schur is going to join us. He's editor-at-large from CNET.com, and we'll have some tech talk as the Nick DiGilio Show continues here. My daddy was the family baseman. My mom was an engineer. And I was born one dark gray morning. Music coming in my ears. All right. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Mitchell.
Mitchell. All right. Hey, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And after the news, Ian Schur from CNET.com is going to be joining us. Okay, so they released these new hats that have the Cubs and Sox logos on them, the city flag, and then a slice of deep dish pizza depicted on the hat. And they're dumb. And now we're talking about sports teams in Chicago sports teams logos, and here's some texts have come in. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 847 says, "No food on a baseball hat at all."
I mean, I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
I'm very cool with that.
781 says, Tommy from Boston, stay with just the black elegant socks. Yeah. It's a great logo. It's a great hat, great uniform.
And Boston's good with the very simple logos.
Yeah.
You know? Red socks, just the red B.
708 says, this is just Joe, that they should put a pothole on the... I like the construction sign in the pothole. I think those are both hilarious. Mike from Evanston says, cracker thin, crisp crust... pepperoni, sausage, mushrooms, onion, black olives, green peppers, and anchovies. You got to have the anchovies. That's a little much for me. I don't like 9,000 toppings on my pizza. Maybe 2-3 at the most. Not like 9 million. 847 says the Blackhawks logo is the best logo ever. Yes. Blackhawks number one. It's not even close. All sports anywhere. I agree.
I also like the one where it's like the two tomahawks crossed.
Yeah.
I really like that one. That's a cool one.
Let's see. Okay, so coming in last is the Blackhawks. Next, coming in fifth, is the Bulls. I like the Bulls logo. I think it's cool. Don't you think the Bulls logo is cool?
Yeah, I think it's cool.
He's a badass, that guy.
Hasn't changed over, I think it's always, hasn't it always just been that Bulls logo?
Yeah, yeah.
And plus he got Benny the Bull. I love Benny. He's so silly.
Yeah, well, he's a mascot. He's supposed to be. Coming in fourth is the Chicago Fire. I like that logo.
I think they've recently switched it up, I think,
a little bit. Number three is the White Sox. We're talking about the current logo. For the White Sox. Number two, the Cubs. And number one, the Bears. That's how they rank them.
I mean, the Bears logo. Yeah.
Bears logo is great. I would pick the Cubs because, I love the Cubs.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but the Bears logo is awesome.
Yeah, and they have changed the Chicago Fire logo.
Have they?
Yeah, it no longer looks like a fireman's logo. You know how it kind of looks like?
Yeah, no. That's what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, but now it's kind of just a blue oval that says Chicago Fire FC and two almost crown-looking things in the middle that reflect each other. Top half is yellow, bottom half is red.
Mm.
It's kind of indistinct, but it looks more European. It looks more like it would be something like in a... European soccer team logo.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't mind it.
And the Bears logo is legendary. I think it's great. But I think the Bears and the Bulls have similar logos. Both badass animals. Like, they're angry. They're both angry. But, and also, you got to love Staley. You got to love Staley. Oh, man. So, what do they say here about the Cubs coming in second? Try your best to forget that night you were working too late in the library and stumbled toward the red line only to discover that it was filled rail to rafters with drunk Wrigley bros yelling incoherently and making the entire eastern side of the city physically and emotionally uncomfortable, because this logo is one of Chicago's best. I hate overzealous American patriotism as much as the next frustrated socialist. Okay, this is not me talking, by the way.
Yeah.
This is the author. but baseball might be one of the country's most genuinely charming traditions. The Cubs logo invokes that tradition in its pure red, white, and blue motif that recalls the however flawed down-home patriotism of the county fair and the Midway. It helps that Wrigley Field is one of America's oldest standing stadiums. Folks have been eating ketchup-free hot dogs and catching foul balls there for more than a century. This logo is design simplicity at its best. A circle is always a reliable foundation shape, and in this case, it lays the framework for the C itself. The UBS breaks up what would have been the monotony if the C continued in its circular motion, thus making the image more dynamic. Yeah. Cubs. Yeah, it's a classic logo. Sox have a classic one, too. I mean, the current one. So there haven't been a... There have been changes to some sports logos in the past. 630 says, look up Albuquerque Isotopes logo. Albuquerque Isotopes? All right, let me do that right here. Let me do that. Okay. The Albuquerque Isotopes. Okay. And boom. There it is. Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's a cool logo. Have you seen this one?
The Albuquerque
Isotopes.
Yeah, no, I like it.
It's a very cool logo. All right. Let's see. 847. Says, the Blackhawks logo is not racist or disrespectful. It shows a strong, confident, capable warrior, not a cartoon character. It's respectful. Okay.
It is a strong logo. It's super identifiable.
It's a great, it's the best sports logo.
Mm.
Truck and Phil says, right on, Nick. The last meal my loving wife Cindy and I shared together before she passed away on February 1st, 2018 was a Royal Feast thin crust cut in squares right on. That's always been our favorite, as well as we have tried many of the popular pizza spots in Chicago over the years. Deep dish to thin crust always worked out well. We all loved all foods. The new Portillo's in Fort Wayne, Indiana rocks, by the way. It's because Portillo's rules. Do you see that Portillo's is now going to have a food truck?
What?
Yes.
You know, some days I wake up and I'm like, you know, what kind of day is this going to be? And then there's a world where Portillo's food truck exists, and I am happy.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, Portillo's.
We're so lucky to live in this day and age.
Yeah. Portillo's is fantastic. I'm not speaking out of... everybody knows that Portillo's rules. It's one of the great local institutions, but now there's going to be a food truck. You know, they park food trucks right outside our building here.
They do.
And, I mean, we're never here when they're open.
Which is kind of a bummer.
It is. Sometimes I'll see them, you know, parked on the truck in the morning.
Yeah.
Parked outside, but they're closed, obviously.
Right.
But, yeah, this is one of those spots where they line up. Mm-hmm. Like, right down why am I blanking on the... Columbus.
Columbus, yeah.
Yeah.
Hang out. They used to hang out right outside Trib.
They did. Behind the Trib building.
Yeah.
They were actually closer to the NBC building.
Mm-hmm. They would have some time. I think there was like maybe it was a special festival or something. It was a food truck festival. Because I walked out. That's Pioneer Plaza right there.
Pioneer Court.
Pioneer Court. And they just had a bunch of food trucks. I had just worked maybe like 20 hours. I'd been in the studio for like 20 hours. And I walk out and they've got the Cheesy's food truck.
Oh, man.
And I used to work at Cheesy's and I went up and I was like, boy, am I glad to see you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that's, I mean, it made headlines all over the place, the Portillo's. Like, people went nuts. When people found out that Portillo's was actually going to be available in a food truck, they went nuts. Sports logos, by the way. Here's Jimmy on WGN. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, good evening, Nick, and good evening, everybody. Hey, I just sent you the message about Blackhawks, number one, but I have another one, and I'm a little biased towards this one also. The Blackhawks still number one. The Chicago Sting had a great uniform and a great logo.
Absolutely.
And thank God for two titles from that in 1981 at Old Comiskey Park in a shootout on a goal and a shootout by Franz Matthew. They put us in the championship round on that. We covered Comiskey Park that night. The people that were there, like me, who jumped on the field, had a blast. And then they won the title a few days later over the New York Cosmos.
Right.
Sting was awesome. I missed the Sting. I missed their indoor soccer, too. I missed it.
Yeah. Yeah, that Sting was very exciting. I mean, you know, that was a really big deal when they won the championship. That was a really big deal. And the logo was great. Do you remember? You weren't around.
I wasn't around. I was, you know, I think the Chicago Fire really became a thing right when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And we got really into that. But they would show off the old Sting uniform and everything.
That was a big deal when they won. When they won. Yeah, the Angry Bee. Okay. All right. There you go. Some sports logos. 312-981-7200 Thunder. If you want to jump in with your text. Jimmy, thank you for the call. We got the news coming up. And Ian Scherer is going to join us, editor-at-large from CNET.com right here as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here on a Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And there we go. One of our regular guests that stops on the show usually about once a month is Ian Scherer, editor-at-large at CNET.com. And he's our tech guy. We love to talk tech with him. CNET.com is a great website that keeps you posted on everything that's happening in the world of tech. And he's the editor-at-large there. And you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Scherer. That's S-H-E-R-R. And we welcome Ian. Hi, how you doing, Ian?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. Listen, first of all, I think we have to congratulate you. You're a new father.
Yes, I have a beautiful daughter. I'm actually spending some time on leave, spending time with her, although, of course, I'm keeping up with all the tech and everything. But
yeah.
It's been really great getting to spend some time with her.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for actually taking the time to do the show. I would imagine being a new father is a busy, crazy time.
It can be, yes, but this is the magical hour where she's down for her first sleep of the evening before she wakes up to feed, so we're in a good spot right now.
Well, great. Congratulations to you and your wife. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's get into tech. Tell everybody about CNET.com.
So CNET is the world's largest tech news site. We obviously do a ton of news around policy, around what the companies are doing, about what the latest tech is, and then we also review it, right, which is probably the best part about it all, is we tell you whether or not it's good in your life and whether it's going to help you. And that's one of the things I think that really makes us special, is that we're not just looking at tech for tech's sake. There's plenty of people who do that. We really try and figure out, is this going to help your life be better? Is this stuff going to make things worse? And why? And I think those are really key things that are very important these days.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the website is great. It's very helpful, very informative, and fun to read. CNET.com, everybody should check it out. Oh, well, let's get to some of the tech news. Now, obviously, there's the big story out of Iowa. The Iowa caucus is all kind of blamed on an app. There was a complete debacle in the Iowa caucus. Tell us about it and what happened and what went wrong.
Yeah, I think debacle is a kind word. Supposedly, so what had happened was that this app had coding issues. So the Democratic Party in Iowa runs the caucuses there. It's not run by the state, which is unusual across the country, but specifically that's how Iowa works. And what they do is that, you know, it's not like normal voting tabulations, right? There's, you actually have people in a gymnasium or in a room or whatever, and they are actually choosing sides in real time. And that information is then sent up to the Democratic Party, which then releases the results. Well, they thought by creating an app, as most people think, it'll make it better. But it turns out that the Democrats just can't get it right. And what ended up happening was that even though they promised that after many journalists asked them, hey, are you sure? This is the first time you've used this app. Are you sure you've got it safe and secure and reliable? They said, we've got it. We've been testing it. We know it works. And then it failed. To their credit, they say it's not a hack that it happened. That's something we always worry about with the Democrats after 2016's email hack. They say it was not hacked. It was mostly just kind of a rough patch. Think of it as, you know, launching the app, and it had a few too many bugs. But, you know, we got the information about the Iowa caucuses about 24 hours later, and here we are. But it's still a real black eye for them after trying to act like they are ahead of the times, and they are catching up to what is a very strong lead among Republicans when it comes to understanding technology. The Democrats really seem to be struggling.
Yeah, it was just so crazy. Where did the app come from? Who made it?
Yeah, so it was made by this company called Shadow Inc., which if I were building an app and for a company that was involved in politics, I don't know if I would choose that name. But regardless, it was built by this company that is supposedly a bunch of former Obama and Clinton staffers who see that the Democratic Party looks like it's behind on technology, and they wanted to prove that it could go forward and help them do that. Obviously, not the way that they wanted it to play out, although they're trying to save face and saying that they fixed all the issues. We'll see. But it is one of those things where, you know, the Democratic Party, I think, made a legitimate effort to kind of get up to the times, and it just did not play out well for them.
Yeah. The Democratic Party does have that reputation then, huh?
When it comes to technology, it's really interesting. You may remember that back in 2008 and 2012, President Obama was really being heralded as this the future of the party in terms of technology. He had built an app that was hugely popular. He'd gotten all these people to engage with him on Facebook and then later on Twitter. He was really successful there. And you may not remember, but one of my favorite things that happened was that they released some of their information publicly about what they learned from email marketing and everything, and the most popular email they ever sent out, the subject line was "Hey," I think it was, H-E-Y, people. So, like, Obama had figured a lot of this stuff out, but then the Trump campaign just went so far ahead and was so much more effective, especially on Facebook. And that, by the way, is still something that people talk about, is that to this day, the Republican Party seems to really understand how to use technology to get to their voters more than the Democrats do. And that's really tough to see for them. And I think they want to make it better, but obviously they are really struggling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, obviously you're talking about technology in the Trump administration. I mean, he uses, he tweets like 150 times a day. And gets
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, and I think he's obviously very savvy about the internet in general, right? Whatever you may think of him, he definitely knows how to get people's attention and get them to share it, and that is very, very, very effective. And what's interesting as well is that I think a lot of people before he was elected kind of looked down at his campaign because it was very light on staff and they seemed to be very disorganized. But it turns out that the people he did have really understood how the internet worked and were able to pull those levers and push those buttons just the way they needed to. And I think that that's a real lesson for anyone who wants to campaign in the future, is that they really need to understand this technology and work with it correctly.
Right.
And that's just something that other people have not been able to repeat yet.
Okay. All right. Ian, we're going to continue our conversation. Ian Schur is with us. He's editor-at-large at CNET.com. One of the best tech websites out there. And we're going to talk more tech news right here as the Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN. Lonely feeling.
feeling deep inside. Find a corner where I can hide.
And the Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. And we are going to talk. It's Wednesday. So we're going to talk about these new Cubs and Sox hats and the effect that they're having. They're really ridiculous. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We are going to talk about 15 music careers of celebs and then talk a little bit more about some actors and actresses who you didn't know maybe had a recording career of any kind. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Ian Schur, we continue our conversation. He's editor at large at CNET.com, which is a terrific website. And we love to talk tech with Ian. And let's continue our conversation. Ian, before we jump to the next topic, we were talking about the Iowa caucus app debacle. What's next now for using apps in this kind of situation? After this whole thing, there's got to be some sort of effect that it's going to have. And what's going to be next?
Well, with any luck, it's going to scare these people into doing it the right way. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the real thing that is a constant reminder for us about government and technology is that this is not Silicon Valley. This is people's livelihoods. This is the elections. This is the center of democracy stuff. You can't put out a photo app and have it fail and then do the same thing with our elections. And I think that that's really the struggle here, is that the way that Silicon Valley works, in the sense that, you know, move fast and break things, as Facebook often used to say, is not something that's a good idea here. And we saw this, by the way, with healthcare.gov. You remember when Obamacare started? That was a disaster.
Yeah.
And we have, even today, the IRS website is up and down and up and down. It just doesn't make sense that the industry, or rather the government, really hasn't been able to figure out technology to be effective. But hopefully this is going to be a wake-up call for a lot of people to start really trying to invest in it and think about this stuff ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the lesson, there has to be a lesson learned. I found it amusing, though, when it was all happening, immediately everybody started talking about Russia. You know, that it was a Russian hack. Immediately, I just thought it was interesting that was where everybody went to, like, immediately when that happened.
Well, and to be fair, there's a lot of reporting out there that Russia is already engaged in efforts to undermine our election and hack specifically into some of the companies in Ukraine,
right,
and all sorts of other stuff. So we do know that there are efforts there, which is why I think a lot of people's minds go there. And also, I mean, let's be honest, they are enemy number one on the internet right now for us. So it would make sense that people would be worried about it.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a headline that's kind of interesting. Teens have figured out how to mess with Instagram's tracking algorithm. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You may know that there are, the way that you are tracked on the internet is just crazy, right? They know everything you do. They actually track where you hover. You may not even click on the link, but if you hover on it, they actually learn from what you're interested in just by that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of the stuff that goes on, and what has happened is that the next generation of internet users obviously are really upset about some of this stuff, and they're trying to be more savvy about it. So there's a group of teens that we spoke to over at CNET that I think is really fascinating. What they've started doing is they've started sharing dozens of Instagram accounts among them. And the reason that this is important is that those Instagram accounts, when you have multiple people posting from them, from Germany and then from Alaska and then from China or wherever else, what ends up happening is that all the tracking data that Instagram pulls gets messed up, right? And, you know, one person is interested in dogs, another person's interested in food, and it doesn't learn you enough to be able to advertise at you. And then in a lot of ways, this is a political statement toward Instagram, but it's also a really fascinating example of how the next generation is trying to upend the way that the internet works today.
It's interesting because it's always young people that make these that do this stuff. You know what I mean? Because they're really honed in. A lot of the teenagers now have never been without, you know, there's a whole generation of young people who have never been without the internet, never been without this kind of technology.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things we constantly learn, and, it, you know, I myself as someone who grew up without the Internet as well, is that I've been really fascinated by seeing how people, how different generations respond, right? So, for example, there was the generation, a couple of, if we go back half a generation now, right, the ones who are just entering the workforce, I think they're called Gen Z, those people were some of the first to really get into video on the web, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that was because broadband became widely popular, but now we're all streaming on the web, we're all doing YouTube, all this type of stuff with stuff they really were on the bleeding edge of. And what's really fascinating is the next generation is all doing all sorts of different stuff in the way they interact on the web, and I'm really curious to see how that changes the dynamic of how we use the internet in the future.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see. So how are they doing this? How are they figuring out the Instagram's tracking algorithm?
Well, what they do is that they basically don't care about whether or not they have a ton of people following them, right? So I don't have, if I were one of these teens, I would not have Ian Schur's Instagram account. I would have, you know, whatever, I love puppies, right? And what would happen is I would share that with a bunch of different friends of mine, and we would all post to it. So it's no longer about me, myself, on the internet, which is something that a lot of previous generations are very wrapped up in, right? That being internet famous, having the most followers or whatever, that's not particularly at least what these teens are doing.
Yeah.
They are instead trying to get the most out of the internet while also trying to share with their friends and not be tracked by advertisers. And that's a different thing. I think a lot of people are happy to give up their privacy, or at least feel like that's a fair trade to be able to use a lot of this stuff for free. And very clearly, these teenagers are saying, no, that's not what I want to do. And they're finding ways around it. And I think that's really fascinating.
Is this like a full-on movement, Ian?
You know, it's hard to tell how many people are doing it. Obviously, the way Instagram is set up, it's actually designed to avoid that kind of stuff. So I imagine that it's not something a lot of people are doing. But the reason why this is an interesting story is that I think we're going to see more and more examples, and this may be a trend eventually, of the younger set really trying to kind of move away from the stuff we see as standard operating procedure on the internet, like tracking, like being all about me and my profile and my clout on the internet. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because I think a lot of people who kind of sit around and just look down at the younger generations think they're all trying to become YouTube stars. And it's very clear that at least in this example, they're really just trying to find new ways to use the internet without being tracked the way they don't want to.
Yeah, I find that refreshing. I got to tell you, Ian.
I do too, honestly.
Yeah, I really do. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN and the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing our conversation here with Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET.com, one of the best tech websites that you can have. I would love to see teenagers, you know, make a change. And it is, you know, like the generational thing where people just kind of have a cliche that these kids are all just like, all they want to do is, you know, get on YouTube and do all that stuff. I think it's unfair that that's the case. And I really root for these kind of kids who are trying to make a change.
Yeah, and I think what's going to be interesting is that as the baby boomers kind of start to get smaller as a generation, I think that's the kindest way to put it, what's going to be really interesting is to see how the internet changes, because right now the largest generations on the internet are obviously the boomers and the millennials.
Yeah.
And I think as we start seeing the makeup of the internet change, the culture is going to change too, and that's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, the privacy issue, that's the number one issue, you know, with the internet, right, Ian? That's got to be it, right?
Well, I think a lot of people would argue that, yes, it is. But what I think is fascinating is that it's only become a hot-button issue for the general public over the last few years after Facebook had its Cambridge Analytica scandal, which we've written, of course, a ton about on CNET. And we've seen stuff like the election interference and all these things. That has kind of caused this conversation to start about how are these companies safeguarding our data? How are they taking their responsibility as stewards of our information. And I think that it's caused some people to really rethink the way they approach this stuff, but it's only recently that we've really started talking about it as a big group, right? We, us, you know, over at CNET and all the tech journalists, we've been squawking about this for years, but it really took kind of, I think, a moment for everyone to realize, oh, this is really bad.
And the interesting response to the people who are in charge of this stuff, like Zuckerberg's response was kind of fascinating to hear.
Well, I think all of them, their response has been really interesting because in a lot of ways, they're used to hearing me squawk about it, right?
Right.
They're
right.
Really used to hearing me say, you know, what about the privacy, and then having to deal with me and then move on, right? And I think that in a lot of ways, they look at the stuff, and we've seen internal memos from Facebook and whatnot, where they've said that they feel like this is a blip in the road, right? They
yeah,
think
yeah.
that, you know, over time, people are going to get over this, which I don't know if they're right about that, but I think it's really fascinating that to them, this is not as much of a moment in time as it is a political obstacle.
Yeah,
right. And I, to me, at least, this feels like a cultural moment and really a touchstone for all of us where we start reassessing the way we look at the Internet.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious to know why they think it's not going to be that big a deal.
Okay. All right. Ian Schur is with us. We continue our conversation. Ian Schur is editor-at-large at CNET.com. And more tech talk as we continue here on the Nick DiGilio Show. Yeah, the Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. At 4 a.m., we'll head over to Bradley Place to the TV side and hear the early morning news from WGN TV. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive on this Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Ian Schur, editor-at-large for CNET.com. We continue our conversation with Ian. Ian, Disney Plus is a massive success. 28.6 million subscribers, and that's a massive success for a new service. And one of those 28.6 million subscribers happens to be my producer, Tom.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
well, and I'll share, I am also one of their subscribers, although, to be honest, I got it for free when I signed up for Verizon Fios. So for what it's worth, I don't know how long I'll be a subscriber after my year ends, but
yeah.
I'm one of them right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about this in terms of the numbers here. I mean, this is a huge success. They had that small little glitch the day that it launched. Then, of course, everybody made a big deal out of it, as we talked about before. But since then, it's just been a big success for Disney.
It's been huge. I mean, they were predicting 60 to 90 million subscribers after 5 years. And they're already almost halfway there.
It's amazing.
Just 3 months after starting. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
And I think what it speaks to is the draw of Disney's own empire, right? I mean, Star Wars, you've got The Simpsons, you've got Marvel, you've got all this type of stuff, and it's really been able to draw people in, not to mention The Mandalorian, which is the Star Wars TV show that's
yeah.
really been a hit, with especially among fans, but also non-fans. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this ends up playing out. I mean, the car price is also, you know, it's rather low compared to a lot of their competitors. It's lower than Netflix. It's lower than a number of other ones. And it's $7 a month. So I'm really curious to see what's going to end up happening over time. But it's very clear that Disney is going to be one of the power players, at least in this first iteration of this streaming wars that we are starting to enter in with HBO and, you know, my employer CBS and all these other people having their own streaming services.
Yeah, and it's as someone who's been around and consumed a lot of television over the many years, it's really astonishing how technology has changed the way we watch TV and we consume the product.
Let me tell you, talking about younger generations, my son barely understands what an advertisement is. And I think that that's a real testament to the fact that streaming has really ruined his sense of what television is. I remember sitting there, and there are advertisements my friends and I talk about from, you know, many, many moons ago, right? There are people who sing the Jolly Green Giant song sometimes.
Yeah.
Here we're sitting here in 2020, and there are children who are not being exposed to advertisements, I think, because of how upended all of this stuff is. It's really fascinating how our culture is changing as a result of all of that.
Yeah, it's funny. A younger generation, I wonder if they cared about the Super Bowl commercials. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. And as the generations change, I'm really curious to see. I will say that, you know, the Fox did their best. They had it this year with the 4K streaming and all that and having all the apps. And they really tried to heavily promote it. But it was interesting. The most popular thing I think came out of that Super Bowl was the halftime show really got a lot of attention.
It did.
And it's at the top of YouTube trending right now, not any of the advertisements.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Disney Plus, that's a success, no question about it, a massive success. Tom, are you enjoying the Disney Plus? I know you watched The Mandalorian and other things. What do you think of the product?
I'm still pretty satisfied with it, especially since there's that nice bundle you can get where it's ESPN Plus,
yeah.
So I can watch out of market hockey. I watch German soccer a lot.
Yeah.
And then you get your Hulu and then Disney Plus. I think it's like $12.99 a month altogether. So as of right now, it's still got a lot of worth. I'm really hoping that they fix the letterboxing for the Simpsons episodes,
yeah.
Which has been really annoying as a Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
But I think for the average person out there, Disney Plus is an amazing deal.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ian Schur is with us, editor-at-large at CNET.com. We continue our conversation on 720 WGN. So how about this? Stephen King has made a statement about Facebook. He's done. So what's tell us a little about that.
He's not just done. He is giving up an account where he has more than 5.5 million followers. And what it is that he is not comfortable with the flood of false information that's been allowed into local advertising. If you may not remember, Facebook in particular has made a stand about allowing politicians to basically say whatever they want in political ads versus Google and Twitter and other ones who have said that they can't lie or they're basically not accepting political ads. And I think it's real telling that Stephen King, I mean, a very popular person online, is making the stand on this stuff. It'll be interesting to see whether anyone else does. Typically, when this stuff happens, even though it gets a lot of attention, ultimately, it really doesn't have that much impact, and people go to their kind of political corners over it and argue over it. But it still says something when Facebook is getting this kind of blowback this far down the line, right? And that it took Stephen King, you know, all of the drama and everything that's happened, this is where he's planting his flag.
Yeah, and he posted, I'm quitting Facebook, not comfortable with the flood of false information that's allowed in its political advertising, nor am I confident in its ability to protect its users' privacy. Follow me on Twitter if you like.
And speaking of which, he posted it on his Twitter.
Yeah, he did. He did. He posted that on his Twitter. But that's great. I mean, that's really quite a statement. I mean, you know, people love Stephen King, and he's been in the public eye, and people, you know, he's a very opinionated guy. He's not a guy who's afraid to say what's on his mind or how he feels in any topic, and even politics. So.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm really curious to see how this plays out. For what it's worth, we've seen a lot of different celebrities kind of go to their own corners over social networks. So, for example, George R. R. Martin, the guy behind Game of Thrones, very famously posts on a blog that is part of a service that most people don't use at all anymore in the United States. So there are people, when you have a real kind of affinity for someone, you're going to go and seek them out wherever they are. And I have a feeling Stephen King will not lose much out of this. What he's getting is he's getting his left jab at Zuckerberg, which I think a lot of people want to take. So yeah. I'm not surprised he took it.
Yeah, 5.6 million followers. That's really something. All right. Ian Schur, we're having a conversation with him as it continues. Editor-at-large at CNET.com. Google's parent company reveals YouTube revenue for the first time. This is a big story.
Yeah, $15 billion in ad sales from YouTube. And
why
this is important, I mean, I'd love to have those kind of problems, right? I remember when Apple was struggling to hit $20 billion, and this was just 10 years ago, and now a piece of Google is $15. It's just unbelievable. And I think part of why this is important is that YouTube is quickly becoming one of the centers of the Internet, and it already has been for quite quite a while. I think it's the number two most visited website in the world. But, you know, we've never really known how large it is other than its traffic. And it's notable that they only gave us the revenue, so we only know how much it made from ad sales, not whether it's actually profiting at all.
Right.
The cost of you know, all those videos is pretty high. But, you know, I think it says something that this is an enormous piece of Google. It's an enormous piece of just kind of the internet. And I'm really curious to see what else we learn about it over time, especially as advertisers are increasingly wary of putting their ads on some of these videos where you've had neo-Nazis or you've had other stuff on YouTube where their ads have shown up next to, and they've really pulled back. Sometimes, in a lot of ways, Google's saying, look at how large we are. You can't ignore us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've grown so successfully. I remember the early days of YouTube. And how it's grown. And now there's, you know, the YouTube, you got YouTube TV, you got YouTube Music, you got Premium. There's 20 million people who subscribe to that stuff. It's an empire.
It is. And what I think is really fascinating is that you've got Silicon Valley company, Google, which is not a content expert, right? They're not Hollywood. They're not even close to Hollywood. They're 400 miles away from it. But they've been able to harness this kind of center of the video world in a really fascinating way. And I think what's going to be a real challenge for them in the future is, speaking of the next generation stuff, you know, you've got stuff like TikTok, and you've got stuff like how Twitter is doing live streaming. You've got Twitch for video games. All these different services that have become really popular. How YouTube is going to stay relevant is going to be a real conversation. And I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on it, as CNET always does. Ian Schur, we're having a conversation, continuing our conversation with Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET.com, a great tech website. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian Schur, and that's S-H-E-R-R. More tech talk. We continue here on the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN. And it's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Wednesday morning. And, yeah, we're having a conversation with Ian Schur that continues right now, editor-at-large at CNET.com. Ian, we were, you know, Google comes up a lot, obviously, in any conversation that we're having about technology. This is a good one here because this is a scary kind of a thing. We're talking about privacy a lot as well. But Google keeps a scary amount of data on us, and you guys posted how to find it and delete it. This is an important thing. Give us some info on that.
Yeah, and we have instructions on CNET. I'm not going to go through it all. But I think what's really important is that if you go into your Google account page, which if you have a gmail.com address, you're going to have this information there, you can actually learn all the information they have on you. And it is truly amazing how much they have on you. They record, for example, all of the different all the different websites you Google for, all the different places you go when you're in Google Maps, the videos you watch on YouTube. You can actually download your entire YouTube video history, which is something New York Times did once and learned a lot about one person over the period of a few years.
Uh-huh.
It's just really fascinating how much data they keep on you. And of course, all of the stuff they do by default, right? So all of the stuff is being tracked about you by when you sign up for it, and you have to tell them turn it off, which you can, and we have instructions for that on CNET as well. And you can even download this information and be able to parse through it if you're really fascinated by it. Google has a system to allow you to actually download everything that you've done on Google and then take it somewhere else if you want to, or delete it. So that's a really beneficial thing as well.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the piece that you put up on CNET, and there are detailed instructions on how you can do this, and I think it's important that people should check this out, and people might be really, really surprised and concerned just about how much info they have.
Yeah, and I think what's also interesting is there's also stuff that you can learn from their ad preferences, which is another setting we have instructions for on CNET. And you can learn what they're kind of focusing ads on you for. And I think that's really fascinating because they make a lot of assumptions about you based on what you do. And by the way, Facebook does this too. We actually have instructions on CNET for you to learn what Facebook thinks your politics are and how they send ads to you. And you may be surprised by what they think you are based on on the stuff you post and what you write. So these types of things, these companies are making decisions about what you see and what's shown to you based on all of this information. I think it's really important for you to know what they think you are so that they get it right, or you tell them, hey, knock it off.
Yeah, that's a very George Orwell type thing happening here.
A little bit, yes, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how do people, you know, what are some ways, just in general, that people can keep an eye on it and protect their privacy while they're online? Because everything is out there already in the ethers, but how do we protect ourselves?
Yeah, so the best way that you can protect yourself is to go through these settings and know, just be aware of what they're doing. And you can tell it to turn off some of this tracking stuff. So, for example, I have it set so that it doesn't keep track of all of the Google searches I do, because I feel like that's really weird. But there's other stuff I leave on, like I leave on some of the YouTube history, because sometimes I saw a video and I want to show it to a friend.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you're aware of what they're doing and then making good decisions. Another thing also is that there are settings you can do on your computer to be able to avoid them tracking you. So, for example, there are systems like the Tor network. If you've never heard of that, we have instructions on CNET. It completely anonymizes you. Or other stuff that will help you avoid some of these tracking things. And trust me, Facebook and Google do their best to track you, whether you have an account or not. But there are ways for you at least to feel like you're somewhat protected from them if you want to be.
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty scary, actually. I mean, it really is.
This is why we're starting to see regulations starting up and politicians and really starting to put pressure on these companies, because there's no more choice, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you live on the internet, Facebook and Google know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And some people are not comfortable with that. And those people, a lot of people argue, should have a choice.
Yeah, I think they should. We were talking with Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET.com, about tech stuff, which we always do, usually once a month. Ian joins us. And if you weren't with us a little bit earlier, right at the top of the interview, we mentioned that Ian has a new baby. Congratulations again, Ian.
Thank you.
And there's a news story here from CNET that you guys did, and I think this is going to be interesting. I want to hear your take on this. It's a $1,300 smart bassinet that you can get. Tell us about this story and what you feel about it as a new father.
Yeah, so this thing came out a couple of years ago. It's called the Snoo, S-N-O-O, and it's actually the guy behind it. His name is Harvey Karp, which for people who are Gen X and above, you may know him because he's kind of the guru of the parent scene. He had a book called The Happiest Baby on the Block, which went super-duper blockbuster, and he's since started a company to help people basically have easier times with their babies, including through this device. And what it does is that it will gently rock your child to sleep. Now, that's not what $1,300 pays for. What it also does is it has a microphone in it, several of them actually, and speakers. And what it does is that it plays different sounds that help coo your child to sleep. And if it senses that your child is starting to wake up or get upset, it will change the sounds and actually rock them at a different speed and pace. And all of this is designed to help the children sleep better based upon what his books had recommended for years. It's a really fascinating idea. There's actually, I've spoken to him a number of times about it for CNET,
yeah.
And he's actually talked about this thing being brought into, for example, wards for children babies who are born addicted to drugs. You know, their parents are drug addicts, and the babies are born with that addiction, and they have the hardest time as babies, right? I mean, they're not only are they having to learn how to breathe and eat and all that stuff, but then they're also having to basically be weaned from this drug. So they're actually testing this in those hospitals to see if it can help those children. There's a lot of promise behind this thing, and yeah, it's easy to kind of make fun of $1,300. But I'll tell you that one of our editors, Roger Chang, who's our head of news, actually got one. We've had several people use them now and have had really good experiences. And I'll actually share. I have one myself.
Oh, okay.
That I've also been playing with, and I've had, you know, mixed experiences. It speaks to the fact that the kids are all different. You know, Roger's kid really responded well to it. Another, Vanessa, who is one of our reviewers, kid really responded well to it. My daughter now is just starting to respond. respond well to it. She didn't initially seem to really respond to it very well. So every kid is different, but that's what it speaks to, is this effort to kind of offer stuff that will help everybody.
And this has been around, you said, for a couple of years, this item?
Yes, it's been around for several years, and in fact, it started at that $1,300 price point, but now they even have a rental service so that you don't have to pay all $1,300. And this is a conversation among about tech in general for parents, is that there's this whole effort to come out with technology for parents. There are, for example, portable breast pumps. They're really fascinating. We have a great video on CNET. I promise you it's safe for work.
Yeah.
About how one of our reporters carried one of them in, and they actually go into the bra, so people can't even see that you're pumping in the middle of an event.
Wow.
And or if you're on the subway or whatever. And there's just a lot of really interesting technology out there. But the challenge is, it's all very expensive. It's not all proven yet, to my point. Dr. Karp is trying to bring it to hospitals to prove that his thing works. But if it really shows that it can make people's lives better, why not?
Yeah, no, that's great work that he's doing. That's really interesting because, you know, as we move along, I mean, we're talking about tech here, Ian, you know, it should be allowed for parents and new parents to use this tech for easier growing, for having your kids grow up.
Well, and I remind people quite often whenever they snicker at me for having an expensive bassinet,
yeah,
or any technology I'm using with my kid, is that, you know, surveys overwhelmingly show that new parents are miserable people. They just, that they're having a really tough time, and they are much less happy than non-parents, even though they feel more fulfilled, which is an interesting kind of part of all that. And I think a lot of that speaks to the fact that, you know, as our families have grown further and further apart, a lot of us are further away from one another. We don't have as much help for one another. And technology is really one of those things that can step in and really help, you know, two working parent households make it work. And
yeah,
that's really important these days.
Yeah. And that's called the SNOO, correct?
S-N-O-O, yes.
S-N-O-O.
And like I said, we've got a review on CNET of it, video and everything, and instructions for how to use it if you're interested. And then the smart breast pump, we also have information on. We've been really trying to cover all of this stuff, because partially because we're having a baby boom at CNET, but
yeah,
also because, you know, there's kind of a baby boom starting with all the millennials starting to have kids. So
yeah,
That's part of what we're responding to as well.
Wow, terrific stuff. CNET.com is the website. You should check it out. Everything that we've been talking about is there. How big is the staff, by the way, at CNET?
We have over 120, I think, people, including our video team, which is just amazing at what they do. We're basically trying to cover all aspects of technology and how it impacts you. Refrigerators, dishwashers, smart doorbells, and privacy issues as well. Everything in between.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. You guys do a great job. CNET.com. Make sure you check it out. Ian Schur, always a pleasure. Congratulations on the new baby. And we will talk to
you very much.
And we will talk to you again.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Take care.
Ian Schur, editor at large at CNET.com. Always a great time to talk to him. It's a terrific website. If you're interested in tech and you want to know about these items that are available and you want to learn about them and see if they work, it's a great website. Ian Schur, he joins us once a month. All right. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, and we continue here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN continues, we are here until 4 a.m., and Bob Surratt comes in at 5 a.m. After 3:30, we're going to play another round of Know Your Onion. That's a game that we play where Tom will read some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or they are from The Onion, the satirical comedy newspaper. You call in, and we do two rounds, one with each caller, the first two people in. And if you get them all right, you win. It's Know Your Onion coming up a little bit later on. We got Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. That's also coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're going to be talking about some forgotten music careers of famous actors. Many of them are forgettable. So now this is kind of a related story, although he's not an actor. But Elon Musk, what's going on here?
Elon Musk thought it would be a great idea,
yeah,
an excellent idea, to release an electronic dance music single.
Uh-huh. Okay. And it's terrible, is what we hear?
It's pretty bad. It's not very good. It's called Don't Doubt Your Vibe.
Don't Doubt You. I'm looking at the title, and it's You Are instead of Your Vibe.
And the cover of the single is the Tesla truck, but on Mars. So, you know, he's kind of gone off the deep end here, I think.
Well, the guy's a billionaire, you know, so if he wants to record a dance song, I think he probably can. So, all right, so it's Don't Doubt Your Vibe. All right, should we just take a listen to a swatch of this? This is Elon Musk.
That's pretty bad.
What's going on there?
I don't know. He's got like a vocoder going on in the background, and I don't know. But it sounds about as good as a song from Elon Musk would probably sound.
Okay, well, there it is. Everybody tries to have a music career, don't they? Even a billionaire like Elon Musk, who doesn't need to record music because he's got billions of dollars. All right, there's Elon Musk's new single. If you want to get it, I'm sure you can probably find it online. Don't Doubt Your Vibe. You know, for your next rave. All right. Well, this is not the first time a person who probably has no business being in the music business or recording songs or anything like that has happened. We have some examples of forgotten music careers from famous actors. If you want to jump in with your thoughts on some of these actors and actresses who have tried to sing or get into the music business, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Ike on WGN. Hi, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Okay, I had no idea this woman did music. I think I found this out back in 2005 while she was known for Resident Evil, Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that she tried to do some music. I just vaguely remember that. I don't remember what she did, though.
Yeah, it was this one song called The Gentleman Who Fell.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It was kind of had this, like, this Ireland sound to it. It was kind of weird.
Okay. All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
All right, Mia Jovovich, best known for, I guess, the Resident Evil movies, right?
Probably, yeah.
Even though she's in Dazed and Confused, and that's what she should be best known for.
She's just in various things.
You know what movie she was great in? Hmm. Like, legitimately great? You ever see the movie Stone with Edward Norton and Robert De Niro?
Oh, yeah, where Edward Norton has cornrows?
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
It's a great movie. A criminally underseen and underrated movie. And she's really good in it. And I don't think she's a very good actress.
Well, if her singing is anything to go by, she doesn't seem to be great at a lot of things.
Uh-huh. Well, there it is mentioned in this article. She is mentioned in this article. Let's just read what this says, and maybe you can hear a little bit of it. Today, Mia Jovovich is best known as the ass-kicking hero of the Resident Evil movie franchise, but her first step in the spotlight came as a model, a career she began at the age of 9. She broke into acting to star as the star of the made-for-TV movie called The Night Train to Kathmandu. What?
I think that's a strain of marijuana.
The Night Train to Kathmandu. Can you look that up? Look that one up. Go to the IMDb's. The Night Train to Kathmandu. Premiered in 1988. And that's the same year she began recording her first album. Who else was in The Night Train to Kathmandu?
I could not recognize any. Purnell Roberts.
Oh, Purnell Roberts. You know, he was Trapper John.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mia Jovovich, Kavi Raz.
Yeah.
Trevor Eyster.
Star studded.
Yeah, really a lot of a lot of great people. Here's the synopsis.
Yeah.
A young girl leaves for Nepal with her parents and brother, and she is unhappy to leave her home at first. But soon it isn't when she meets a handsome young man. The story unfolds into a romantic and daring quest in search of the invisible city.
Wow. I'm assuming she plays the young woman.
Yeah. The Night Train to Kathmandu.
There it is.
Is that where that Bob Seger song comes from?
No, it's an actual... Yeah. It's yeah, but Night Train, is it Night Train as in the swill bottle wine that you can get for $2 a bottle?
Might have to drink that to get through this one.
In a 1990 interview with Rolling Stone Australia, she described her style as, quote, a mix between Kate Bush, Sinead O'Connor, This Mortal Coil, and the Cocteau Twins. Oh, man.
That's a certain cocktail.
Oh, come on, man. Her first studio album, 1994's The Divine Comedy, was well received by critics. Rolling Stone actually called it a remarkable recording debut. Wow. While she has continued to record since, her last single was released in 2012, acting remains her busiest career. All right, do we have a little piece of Mia Jovovich?
Yeah, this is Mia Jovovich on Conan, singing The Gentleman Who Fell.
This is not Conan Show.
Kissed him so, too ashamed to lift his chin. A voice is speaking, he's the prophet.
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
No, it's not. She clearly enjoys Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Clearly. There's, you know, it's...
just a real nerdy-looking bass player with, like, an 8-string bass in the background.
What year was that?
Oh, that's got to be...
Was that back when Conan was on NBC?
I believe so, yeah. This is young Conan.
Yeah, so it's NBC Conan. NBC Conan. I still never forgave NBC or Jay Leno for what they did to Conan.
Yeah.
Never.
Stinks.
It was so terrible. And then when they did the anniversary special, looking back at the Tonight Show, they entirely skipped the time that he was host. They didn't even mention it. Like, in the history of they were talking about the history of the Tonight Show, no mention of Conan. Ugh. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about kind of the forgotten music careers of some famous actors. 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you, talk or text. Played at every wedding ever.
As it should be.
It's Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN continuing here, and we are here till 4 a.m. At 4 o'clock, we'll head over to our friends on the TV side of WGN and hear the first hour of the early morning news. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Cerati is your morning drive guy. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested the Clampton?
That's Clamp.
That's how one of my friends used to say his name. Eric Clampton.
It's coming to us from Timothy.
Okay. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here till 4, and we are talking about forgotten, or at least should be forgotten, music careers of some famous actors. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some texts coming in and some calls coming in, and we've got a whole bunch more here to talk about, some of which are just horrendous. Here's Donna on WGN. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
How could anyone ever forget William Shatner?
Yeah, Shatner didn't so much sing as kind of just emote. He wasn't really...
badly,
I mean,
emoting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he released a bunch of songs, I think a few albums, in fact, but they were all just like Shatner being Shatner, not really vocalizing, but just kind of being Shatner.
But isn't that how he acts?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, Shatner's the man. I love William Shatner. I think he's great. All right, Donna, thanks.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Take care. Yeah, Shatner, man.
Yeah, the Rocket Man thing is
It's fantastic. It's,
yeah, just sitting there smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
I miss my kids.
Yeah.
I miss my wife.
You know, remember the Priceline commercials? Were you too young to remember the Priceline commercials?
No, he was the Priceline negotiator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, when he was also doing, like, beat poetry?
No.
As he was on stage doing poetry about Priceline?
What the hell?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
No, I've not seen that.
Here's Jay on WGN. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Hi, Nick. Hi, Nick. I love your show. I'd like to remember Barbara McNair, actress Barbara McNair from the 60s and 70s. She started out as a singer, gospel, and Barbara McNair had many albums. She had many singles. She had her own show,
yeah.
The Barbara McNair Show. But that's all I remember. But I liked Barbara McNair. She was born in Chicago.
Mm, okay. All right, Barbara McNair.
February 4th.
There you go. Oh, yeah. So her birthday was yesterday. All right, thanks, Jay.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye. There you go. Here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
Joe Pesci put out an album called Little Joe Sure Can Sing.
Yep. That's kind of a legendary one, and I know that it's going to be mentioned again. We'll probably hear a little bit of it. I remember someone played it for me and asked me to guess who it was, and it wasn't in a million years I would have said Joe Pesci.
My husband did the same thing, and it's all Beatles cover tunes, and it's just, it's wicked awful.
Yeah. All right, Jill, thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
I'm sure that we'll hear a little Joe Pesci.
I can guarantee it.
Yeah, good old Joe Pesci. By the way, Goodfellas was just on the monitor in the producer room there.
Mm-hmm.
It was edited for broadcast because it was on BBC America.
Well, naturally.
But it's still worth seeing, even with the sound down. Um, 708 says, Lorne Green put out a couple of albums while he was on Bonanza. One track was the theme from the show. I did not know that. Lorne Green, star of Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm. The original?
Yeah, the original, not the Edward James Olmos version. 301 says, Bruce Willis, Don Johnson, David Soul, not good. We will mention these again. Don Johnson, particularly awful. I mean, awful. And MTV voted the video for his song Heartbeat as the worst video ever recorded, as the worst video of all time.
Worse than the Billy Squire one?
No, Heartbeat was voted, they would never show it again. They wanted to vote on the worst videos of all time. And that one was, they vowed never to show Heartbeat again. And it's, have you ever heard it? Oh my God.
You can give it away. Your money don't mean much to me. I've been out on my own. Gonna go alone now. Cause that's the way it's got to be. Everybody tells me how I can beat the odds for now. I've been standing by the fire. Just can't be.
Yeah. You gotta get to the chorus. Alright, that's enough.
Why is he in Vietnam?
Well, there was a whole like short film that came along. Ray Dawn Chong was in it.
Yeah, yeah, she
and,
is.
And he was a photojournalist or like a cameraman. And he was covering a war. And so it was like a half an hour long. It was like a mini movie. I vividly remember when that crap was on TV, on MTV. Here's what they say about it. He's mentioned in the article. You can't write an article about, you know, like bad or forgotten music attempts by actors and not have Don Johnson in there, because that is just one of the worst things ever. While his Miami Vice co-star Philip Michael Thomas was busy trying to become an EGOT. By the way, Philip Michael Thomas, another guy. He released a couple of records and tried to have a music career. Don Johnson was making a foray into the music business as well. During the 1980s, he released two solo albums and scored a major hit with Heartbeat, which made it all the way to number five. What? Made it all the way to number five on the Billboard Hot 100. How is that possible? How did what we just heard make it to number five on the Billboard charts? What is going on? His cover of Aaron Neville's Tell It Like It Is also managed to log some radio play. You, Don Johnson, covering Tell It Like It Is. Oh, man. Here's Rachel on WGN. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
You know, I was thinking Eddie Murphy and Party All the Time.
Oh, yeah. My girl wants to party all the time, party all the time. That was actually a hit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking a few others, but I can't remember his song, but the guy from General Hospital, Jack Wagner.
Oh, Jack.
I remember...
Yeah.
His song being on the radio for a little while there.
Yeah, Jack Wagner had a... Oh, man, what did he have? One of his songs was a really big hit.
Right.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was. But, yeah, Jack Wagner from General Hospital. it wasn't Rick Springfield on General Hospital?
Rick Springfield? And I want to say, that's it, Ricky Martin was on it, too?
Was he?
I can't remember. It rings a bell, but I'm not sure.
And Rick Springfield had a really successful music career.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think he still does.
Yeah, he does. He's Rick Springfield. Yeah. All right, thanks, all right. Rachel.
All right, thanks, yep. Nick. Bye.
I see ya.
So for Jack Wagner,
yeah,
he did score a number two hit called All I Need.
Yeah, All I Need is Just a Little More Time.
All I Need is Just a Little More Time to be sure what I feel.
Yeah.
Is it all in my mind?
Yeah.
It's very of its time, I'll say.
Oh,
that.
Oh, man. It was every... That was a huge hit.
Yeah, number two in the U.S.,
yeah.
Number one U.S. adult contemporary. So technically a number one hit.
All right. Rachel mentioned Eddie Murphy. In the 1980s were a very good decade for Eddie Murphy. In addition to being one of Saturday Night Live's biggest stars, he was drawing huge crowds as a stand-up comedian, turning those comedy shows into iconic pieces of pop culture history with Delirious and Raw, and headlining some of Hollywood's biggest blockbusters. In the midst of all this, he somehow found the time to try and launch a singing career and actually managed to produce two hits, 1985's Party All the Time and 1989's Put Your Mouth on Me. Put Your Mouth on Me? Rick James, who produced the former tune, was clearly a fan, though it's actually kind of catchy. It's regularly been cited as one of the worst songs of all time. We have a little Party All the Time?
Oh, of course we do.
Party all the time, party all the time, party all the time.
I love the video because
yeah.
Rick James is hilarious in that video because, like, he is so orgasmically excited about the performance. Like, seriously, that's what it looks like. He's like,
yeah, he's really into it.
And then it's so exciting for him and so orgasmically exciting that he has to bust into the studio and join Eddie. Because he's just essentially, he's on the other side at the board producing.
Yeah, he's in the producer hut.
But he's so excited by how unbelievable Eddie Murphy is. He can't contain himself. He goes nuts. He's shaken orgasmically and runs into the studio because he's got to be a part of this historical song.
Plus, they got a shirtless guitar player wearing nothing but a leather jacket.
Eddie Murphy. That song, again, that song, though, Tom, heavy rotation on MTV.
I can only imagine.
Heavy. All right. All right, forgettable. We've got a bunch of texts coming in, and we're remembering the musical careers that we've forgotten from famous actors. 312-981-7200. And we would love to join for you to join us as the Nick DiGiulio Show continues. Requested the King of the Hill theme.
A listener going by the name Tex, which is pretty apropos for Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah. Wildcard Wednesday. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. King of the Hill. All right, Bobby.
Dang it, Bobby. Yeah. That boy ain't right.
Yeah. Voiced and Bobby voiced by, of course, Pamela Adlon. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The show continues. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the music careers of some actors who thought they could have music careers. Bunch of texts have come in. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Mike from Manuka says, Steven Seagal tried his singing with a song called Girls, It's Girl, It's All Right. You know, do you remember Steven Seagal's music career?
Thankfully not, no.
He played House of Blues here.
You're kidding me.
No. No, I'm not kidding. He seriously tried to have a music career. Played guitar.
Did he karate chop his way onto the stage?
I don't know. I didn't go. I mean, I didn't go to the House of Blues to see him. I was aware that he was, you know, attempting a music career and appeared on some shows on TV and stuff, and it was awful. 773 says Don Johnson and John Travolta actually had some hit songs. We mentioned Don Johnson. But Travolta had a very big hit. Why can't I remember the name of it? He had a really big hit in the 70s. It was like, I don't know if it was before Saturday Night Fever. I think it might have been before Saturday Night Fever. I think he was just Barbarino at this time.
Was it the song Let Her In?
Yes, Let Her In. What, did they have a year?
70. I mean, this is him performing it on American Bandstand, April 10th, 1976.
Yeah.
Something she said has stuck in my head and I can't get away. Gonna let her in. Gonna let her in. Gonna let her in my life.
Yeah, so this was when he was just on Welcome Back, Kotter. And if he's performing on American Bandstand, he's lip-syncing. I just want to make sure everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah, it's very obvious.
Because that's American Bandstand. I don't think there were ever any live performances on American Bandstand, ever. But no, that was a huge hit. I mean, because Welcome Back, Kotter was an incredibly popular show.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of the, you know, everybody loved the Sweat Hogs, but he was kind of the breakout, you know, he's kind of the breakout character. And then when Saturday Night Fever came out, it was all over. I mean, it was just insane. And then, of course, he sang in Grease. So Michael Parks put out several albums when he was doing Then Came Bronson during the late 60s. Nice voice that turned my mom into a groupie.
That's got to be pretty cool, being a Michael Parks groupie.
I did not know that Michael Parks put out albums. I love Michael Parks. He's in that. He's great. He's great. I'm sad he passed away. He's unbelievable in Red State. He's unbelievable in that movie. 309 simply says the Hoff. Well, how can you? You can't hassle him.
You certainly cannot.
He brought down the Berlin Wall. I don't know if you know that or not. He's responsible for the Berlin Wall.
And then after him, Al Gore invented the internet.
That's exactly right. Doc, our good friend Doc, says, Nick, you know what they say. Rich people want to be powerful. Powerful people want to be rich. And rich, powerful people want to be rock stars. I happen to like Jeff Bridges' music and the best band name ever, The Abiders. Jeff Bridges is great. He's a legitimately good musician. He is.
Well, he played for Crazy Heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Bridges is my favorite actor. I love Jeff Bridges. I love everything the guy does. He's also a great photographer. He takes pictures on the set of all his movies. And he released two books of the beautiful photographs that he took. He's got a very special camera I don't know what the details are, but it's got like a special lens, and not many people have that camera. It's a very old camera, and that's what he uses when he takes pictures on the sets of his movies. And the results are really beautiful. 219 says, Patrick Swayze, he had a hit for that Dirty Dancing movie. Don't dismiss Dirty Dancing. She's Like the Wind was the hit that Swayze had. She's Like the Wind.
Featuring Wendy Frazier, right?
I don't know. I know he's on it. Yeah, this is it.
She's taking my heart. She doesn't know what she's done. Feel the breath in my face.
Yeah. She's Like the Wind. She's Like the Wind. Interesting little tidbit about this song. You know, it's on the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. But he wrote that song for Jamie Lee Curtis's character in Grandview, USA. And the director of Grandview, USA said, we're not going to use it. So he recycled it like 4 years later for Dirty Dancing, and it became a really big hit. But yeah, no, that song is written about the character that Jamie Lee Curtis plays in Grandview, USA. You ever see Grandview, USA?
I have not.
It's a good movie. You know who's in it?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. C. Thomas Howell, Jamie Lee Curtis, Patrick Swayze, one of John Cusack's first movies, and Steve Dahl is in it.
No, you're not. Really?
Yeah, it was shot locally.
Very cool.
I can't remember what town they shot it in. But,
does he play a jock?
He does. He plays he plays a DJ at a dance, in fact.
Of course.
815 says, hey, Nick and Tom, didn't Eddie Murphy have a song where he put everything up his butt? That's squat. Put a can of tuna up your butt, or am I nuts? I don't know. Now, you don't want to Google
I'm not Googling down the
Eddie Murphy
computer.
Up your butt. That's not something you're going to want to Google on the company computer.
No, save that for your private time.
Russ says, thanks, Nick. Now Party All the Time is going to be stuck in my head all day.
You should wake up and brush your teeth to that song. Come on,
girl
now.
Girl wants to party all the time. 816 says, Nick, some guys know they're not great but just love playing music. A couple of years back, I won tickets to see these guys on consecutive nights. The Bacon Brothers and Billy Bob Thornton and the Boxmasters. Both are definitely a pop sound, but I did like the Boxmasters.
Billy Bob Thornton's a very talented musician.
He is.
Surprising.
And so are the Bacon Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. Both those guys are good.
No, Bacon. I totally forgot the Bacon Brothers.
No, they're good.
No, they're very good.
Yeah.
Very good recommendation.
Billy Bob Thornton, this is something that you can find on the intranets. Billy Bob Thornton was being interviewed on a radio show, and he wanted to talk specifically about his band and his music. And when the DJ, the interviewer, mentioned one of his movies, he turned into one of the biggest jerk interviews I've ever seen in my life. Like, seriously, because he mentioned one of his movies. And he just was like, it's incredibly uncomfortable to see. There's video of it and also to hear. But as soon as this guy mentioned, the interview mentioned a Billy Bob Thornton movie, it became the most uncomfortable interview, one of the most uncomfortable interviews I have ever seen in my life. And he was a massive jerk. Man, do you have some of it? Oh, here we go.
Music fit into that?
Music? No, it was a Monster magazine.
Right, right. But given that you seem to be quite passionate about music, I was wondering about your...
Would you say that to Tom Petty?
Would I say that he's passionate about music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Would you explain?
Well, that was got to be seriously serious radio, I would imagine, then.
Well, it was on Canadian.
Did you catch that in time, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was on the CBC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it goes on, and it's very uncomfortable, and Billy Bob Thornton is clearly irritated and angry and is doing everything he can possibly do to make this one of the worst and most uncomfortable interviews of all time. So, 301 says, Robert Mitchum, Thunder Road.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Okay, we're talking about sort of the forgotten music careers of some famous actors. Sometimes it turns out okay, sometimes it turns out terribly. And we got many more here that have attempted a music career, many of them should have just stuck with acting. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGiulio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Coming up at 3:30, get ready to call in because you might play Know Your Onion. That's where Tom reads news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. You'll win. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah.
Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Kent, little Ace Frehley.
Yeah, God. Solo Ace Frehley. Yeah. All right. It's Nick DiGiulio here, and we've been talking about famous actors who tried their hand at music. Sometimes it was okay, sometimes it just wasn't. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right. We got some people on the line. We got texts coming in. If you want to join us, we're talking about famous actors who tried to do some music. 312-981-7200. Here's Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
So, that Eddie Murphy butt song, I know that song.
Okay.
It's called Boogie in Your Butt.
Boogie in Your Butt. It's by Eddie Murphy.
And actually, when you first mentioned his name, I thought that was going to be the song you brought up, because it was, I don't know if it was a hit necessarily, but it was kind of like a spoof song.
Yeah.
And he does say, you know, put a can in your butt. You know, it's just like...
So Doc was right then.
Squat.
Yeah.
Oh, Squat. Squat was right then. Okay.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, so, okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Bye. Mary. Do we have some boogie in your butt?
I'm going to scrub it first just to make sure.
Okay. Well, I really don't think that there, because if it was a hit song, so I don't know. All right, let's see. Chris is on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Gary Sinise was in the Lieutenant Dan band.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, I saw them in Chicago Ridge a few years ago.
Yeah, they played everywhere. And the thing about Gary Sinise, one, he's awesome. Two, what he's done for veterans is unbelievable. The amount of money he's raised, he's unbelievable. And the Lieutenant Dan band that he played, he didn't take a dime from that. All of that went to the veterans associations. Veterans and wounded veterans, because he's so identified with that, the role from Forrest Gump. And he has dedicated a great part of his life to helping out veterans. He's a great guy. A great, great guy. So,
yeah, he's from Chicago.
He is. He's totally, absolutely. Yep. Okay. Thanks, Chris.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, Gary Sinise. Still, I think he still has a place here. Which one of the crime shows is he?
Well, he was on
CSI.
It was CSI New York.
He was on one of the CSIs.
He was CSI
right?
New York, because I always think of how he was on CSI and Vincent D'Onofrio was on Law and Order.
Yeah.
D'Onofrio was criminal, because they were both kind of ill-fated spinoffs. They didn't last nearly as long as their counterparts.
Yeah. Well, nothing lasted as long as the original Law and Order. No, SVU.
SVU.
SVU is the longest running Law and Order spinoff.
But yeah, D'Onofrio was Criminal Intent, which was the one that didn't last super long, and then CSI New York didn't last super long.
But CSI New York, you had Gary Sinise, and then, you know, who's from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
A legendary Chicago actor, stage actor here.
Right.
Joe Mantegna, Criminal Minds.
Yeah,
Criminal Minds. So there's another.
He was great on Criminal Minds, too.
Yeah. Well, he's great on everything. He's great in everything.
I've got a little bit of Boogie in Your Butt.
Oh, Boogie in Your Butt from Eddie Murphy. All right.
In your butt, I say stop to sneeze. In your butt, I say put a tin can. In your butt, I put a little tiny man. In your butt, I say put a light. In your butt, I say make it bright. In your butt, I say put a TV.
What the heck?
I have a vague memory of that. Did they have a year for that?
Let's see here. 1982.
All right, so that's the year 48 Hours came out. So he was just basically on Saturday Night Live at that point. Mm-hmm. So it was just Saturday Night Live. So it was clearly just kind of a goofy song that he played because he was only on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So
it would appear so.
Okay. How about this for actors who have Alyssa Milano? Having conquered the small screen as the star of Who's the Boss, was she really the star of Who's the Boss?
I thought
Tony Danza was the star of Who's the Boss. And Judith Light?
But who was the boss?
That's the question. You never knew. Alyssa Milano set her sights on the music world and, at least internationally, actually had some success. Her 1989 album, Look in My Heart, turned out to be pretty big in Japan. Stateside, she was best known for singing the theme song to her workout video, Teen Steam.
Bad name. Terrible name.
Teen Steam.
No. No.
Well, she was a teen, and she was working out, so there was going to be some steam.
Oh, my God.
She was a teen.
I understand that. That's a terrible title.
Though she told Paste magazine that she's never pulled out the old cassette tapes, she said that she has, quote, watched a couple of the music videos because my brother is in them with me. It was definitely 80s pop, so it was just singing and dancing, all that stuff I love to do. But there's nothing too outrageous. We were able to control all of it. It was like bubblegum pop era, that Tiffany Debbie Gibson era. Clean, good fun. I was 14 or 15, so I don't really remember a lot of it. Alyssa Milano.
Named after the famous cookie.
Get out of here. So her family, her whole family came from that?
Yeah, they're the heirs to the Milano fortune.
Yeah. Leonard Nimoy. How can we forget Leonard Nimoy? We already mentioned Shatner. Leonard Nimoy, in the late 60s, one science fiction icon, paid tribute to the other sci-fi greats with a pair of albums that celebrated the genre with a lineup of songs like Alien, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Earth, Lost in the Stars, and what is perhaps his most famous recording, The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins, which appeared on his second album, The Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy. See, Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy, you get it? Because it's an album.
Yeah.
Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy. See how it works on so many levels?
I think The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins is...
It's fantastic.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins.
It's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, I love it. It's a nice condensation of the entirety of The Hobbit.
Yeah.
It certainly makes things easy.
It's so great. And then we mentioned now Shatner is mentioned in the article. Though more a spoken word artist than a full-on musician, Leonard Nimoy's Star Trek co-star also made a bit of a splash on the music scene, beginning with his 1968 spoken word album, The Transformed Man. He gave us well-known songs like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and Mr. Tambourine Man, a Shatner-esque twist. He recorded a handful of albums since, including 2013's Ponder the Mystery.
Who does this guy think he is?
He's Shatner, man! He's Shatner! Come on!
All right.
You know, when they made the first Next Generation movie, which I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah.
He insisted on dying twice in it. He had to have two death scenes. And he does. He has two death scenes in Generations. Is it called Generations? The first?
Well, there's First Contact, which is Patrick Stewart as Picard. But Generations is the one with both casts in it, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
I don't know. I just know that the first Next Generation movie, whatever it was called, Shatner's in it. And he gets killed twice because he wanted that. I guess he had it in his contract that he wanted to have two death scenes. Only William Shatner would like make that a stipulation of starring in the movie. But I can't remember. I think Generations was the first Next Generation movie. That was the first. I think it was the first one. I don't remember.
No, you're 100% right. Yeah.
What year was that?
1994.
94.
Yeah, so 94, and then First Contact was 96. So that's okay. What I was thinking.
So they the last Star Trek movie with the original cast, was that part six?
Are you talking about, Star Trek Generations has the original cast. Are you talking about
I'm talking about the actual real, you know, like, because yeah, that's a crossover. That's the first Next Generation movie.
Yeah, so that's number six, because then from then on it's 7, 8, 9, 10 is all the Next Generation movies.
And then there was always that theory that only the even numbered ones were good.
Star Trek Nemesis is not good. I'll say that. But
so but Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Star Trek 4 with the whales is great. Star Trek 6, whatever the subtitle of that one, Undiscovered Country.
Oh, God. I can't even remember.
Is great.
First Contact is good.
Yeah.
And then, but 9 and 10 are not good.
Okay.
Not good.
All right. Okay. All right. We got some news here, and that's coming up, and we're going to continue talking about actors who tried some music. 312-981-7200 is the Nick DeJolio Show continues. Yeah. All right. Nick DeJolio here on 720 WGN, and we are continuing the show here. Coming up at 3:30, you got to call in 312-981-7200. You could get on with us and play a round of Know Your Onion, where Tom will quiz you by reading a newspaper or a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's real or it's from The Onion. And we'll do that after 3:30. We are now talking about, by the way, who requested that?
That's coming to us from Donna in Sycamore.
Okay. We are now talking about, and we have been having some fun here talking about actors who tried their hand at music. And some, admittedly, are good and very good. And some are just terrible. So 312-981-7200 for talk or text. We got some texts here. 630 says, an actress who couldn't sing but had one hit, Patty Duke. I'm trying to remember what song she sang. I don't remember. I had such a huge crush on Patty Duke. But like 70s Patty Duke. Not like young Patty Duke. Like Match Game era Patty Duke. 262, Nick, two beautiful actresses who got by on their looks and also sang were Suzanne Somers and Pia Zadora. Suzanne Somers did have a couple of songs, didn't she? 708 says Anna Gasteyer from SNL. She sang in Wicked. She's got an unbelievable. She can sing.
Yeah,
she can sing, man. She's got a great voice.
She's a total threat.
Yeah, no, I mean she's enormously talented, and a kind of an underrated cast member when you go back and look at the like SNL. But yeah, no, she's a legitimate singer. Daryl says Will Smith had a hugely successful music career. Yeah, he did. I mean, that's how he got started. That's how he got started, and then he ended up getting that stupid TV show.
It's not stupid. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, I don't like Will Smith. You know this.
Don't. I know you don't, man.
Carl from Jefferson Park says Shatner also does a truly hilarious version of CeeLo Green's Forget You. On the Conan O'Brien show, even the censored version is hilarious, as the bleeping seems adds to the joke. Sometimes bleeping is inherently funny. I have the box set of the Osbournes, the reality TV show The Osbournes that was on MTV and was a sensation when it was on. And they include the uncensored versions of the episodes. I prefer the beeps. Whenever I watch The Osbournes, it's got to have the beeps because it's hilarious. Because there are like whole scenes in those shows where it's just nothing but beeps. Man, that show was funny. That show was so funny. Okay, we have more from the article here about the forgotten music careers of some famous actors. And we've mentioned this one already, but we got to mention him now and read what they say about Steven Seagal. Who is considered one of the five worst SNL hosts of all time. And I remember his episode. It was horrible. In addition to his run as one of Hollywood's best-known action stars during the late 80s and early 90s, Steven Seagal has attempted a number of other careers: aromatherapy specialist, energy drink maker, law enforcer. Did you watch that reality show?
I did, yeah.
What the hell was the name of it?
Oh, jeez.
Where William he was
Shatner
like
a, embarrasses he was himself. Like
a, no, not Shatner, Seagal.
Seagal, sorry. Steven Seagal embarrasses himself.
I can't remember the name of it, but he was like a sheriff. I can't remember what it was called. Lawman, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, Steven Seagal, Lawman.
Steven Seagal, Lawman. And then, of course, yes, musician. Years after giving his music a part in a few of his own films, including Fire Down Below, Seagal released his first album, Songs from the Crystal Cave. Which Sputnik Music described as, quote, the Plan 9 from outer space of records. Well, that would mean it's so bad it's good.
This is just bad.
Yeah. Songs from the Crystal Cave. I remember seeing him. He did a promotion on it. He was like on talk shows and stuff, and they were letting him perform. And he played the House of Blues. I remember when he came to town because we talked about it on the air. God.
The 90s backbeat's a little bit much.
Oh, man.
That's a tough listen.
All right, how about Bruce Willis? Steven Seagal is far from the only action star to try his hand at music making. In 1987, at the height of Moonlighting's success, Bruce Willis released The Return of Bruno, an album that mixed pop music with blues and managed to produce a hit single, Respect Yourself, featuring the Pointer Sisters. The accompanying video was appropriately cinematic, and in 1989 he released a follow-up album, If It Don't Kill You, It Just Makes You Stronger. Respect Yourself was a hit. It was a hit. And he's out there with his harmonica.
His broom.
And anytime he... Oh, that's right. There's a broom in it.
Yeah, he's
dancing around with a broom.
Yeah, he's like a bartender or something.
Yeah, he's closing up the bar, I think.
Yeah, he's a real working class guy.
I will tell you this, you know, when at the height of them opening Planet Hollywoods all over the place, they would always have like the opening night party, and that would be an excuse to get him on stage with his harmonica and do a couple of numbers with Demi standing next, dancing next to him. He did it in Chicago when they had the big opening night party for Planet Hollywood. That was just yet another excuse for him to jump up on stage with his harmonica.
You want to see John McClane play the harmonica, man?
Man, oh, man.
Come to Planet Hollywood.
How about this? Jennifer Love Hewitt. Thanks to her early acting career on the variety show Kids Incorporated. The hell was Kids Incorporated? I know she started out young. Jennifer Love Hewitt has been singing for as long as she's been acting, and even sang backup on fellow Kids Incorporated co-star Martika's hits 1980 song Toy Soldiers. She sings backup on Toy Soldiers? I didn't know that. Though she released her first album, Love Songs. Oh, see? Love Songs. Get
oh.
it? See? She released Love Songs in 1992 when she was just 12 years old. It wasn't until after she gained fame as an actress that her music career found some steam. How Do I Deal, a single she recorded for the soundtrack of I Still Know What You Did Last Summer in 1999, became her first song to chart. And in 2009, it was reported that Hewitt was working on material for a country album. Sadly, that is yet to surface. Yeah, I vaguely remember Jennifer Love Hewitt singing. I happen to be a really big Jennifer Love Hewitt fan.
Yeah. Well, she's pretty good. She's pretty good.
Yeah, I happen to really, really like her.
Did it mention...
What?
Love Songs is only released in Japan?
Doesn't say that here. But she was 12.
Yeah, she's just a kid.
Yeah. This. Well, she started when she was really young.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer Love Hewitt. You know why I love her? Party of Five.
Naturally.
So, all right. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're going to wrap this topic up here, talking about famous actors or actresses who had some sort of music career. And then at 3:30, we need you to call 312-981-7200 to get in here and be a part of Know Your Onion.
Sees the sun going down and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Well on the way.
Fool on the Hill. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN with the show continuing here on a Wednesday morning. We're live in the Skyline studio. Who requested the Beatles?
It's coming to us from Glenn.
All right, Glenn. Nice job. Hey, coming up after 3:30, Tom will be hosting another edition of Know Your Onion. Well, he'll be reading some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they're from The Onion or they're real. Right now we're talking about actors who actually tried a music career. Sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. How about Joey Lawrence? What was his catchphrase? Didn't he have
a catchphrase?
Didn't he have a catchphrase? Joey Lawrence? Jennifer Love Hewitt wasn't the only 90s teen heartthrob to take a stab at a recording career. In 1993, at the height of Blossom Mania, Joey Lawrence released a self-titled debut album, which included Nothing My Love Can't Fix, which became a bona fide hit around the world. 2014, he told Queen Latifah that he was thinking about making a return to the music scene. Oh, and here they end the thing. Whoa! That was his catchphrase. Whoa! He did that on Blossom, I guess. So, Joe Pesci. We mentioned Joe Pesci. Before he was an actor, Joe Pesci was a barber. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did. He cut hair. In between, he attempted to mount a musical career and didn't do too badly at it. In his earliest days, he played guitar with several bands, including Joey D and the Starlighters. The band went through a few rotations, but Jimi Hendrix ended up playing the same gig as Pesci at a later point. Wow. In 1968, Pesci released a solo album as Little Joe, called Little Joe Sure Can Sing, on which he covered a handful of major hits, including several Beatles songs. In 1998... 6 years after My Cousin Vinny, he released an album in character called Vincent LaGuardia Gambini Sings Just For You. Do we have any Joe Pesci? Little Joe Sure Can Sing from 1968. He sounds like he's 10 on this. Do we have it? I don't hear it. Okay. We're having some technical difficulty here. Seems like. There we go.
I was alone. I took a ride. I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could find another kind of mind there.
Single day. All right. Little Joe sure can sing. They should have put some of those songs on the Goodfellas soundtrack.
I'm pretty sure he would have actually murdered someone.
Yeah. All right, Mr. T. Mr. T. Hang on a second.
I pity the fool.
Where's the one where he's been pitying fools? Where's the... I can't find it. We got this one.
Shut up, fool.
That's from the doll. We had a talking... It was like a talking Mr. T thing. But the one that I want is the one where he's talking to Larry King.
I have been pitying fools for 28 years, Bill, and it's never personal.
No, Bill O'Reilly. He was talking to Bill O'Reilly.
I have been pitying fools for 28 years, Bill, and it's never personal.
Mr. T made no secret about pitying the fools who didn't take advantage of getting an education, and he released a series of videos on this very topic, plus a 1984 rap album titled Mr. T's Commandments, which basically implored kids to stay in school and say no to drugs. Have you ever seen the, by the way, have you ever seen footage of those PSAs that he did with the kids?
I have not.
Oh. They're hilarious. They're absolutely hilarious. We mentioned Mia Jovovich already. Talked about her. How about Burt Reynolds? One year after infamously posing in the nude for Cosmopolitan, for which they asked him about it. He was asked about it years later, and he was like, I was bombed. He got blasted. Burt Reynolds took another chance and released an album, Ask Me What I Am, and also put his pipes to use alongside Dolly Parton in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Music fans didn't seem at all interested. You ever see The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas?
I have, yeah.
You know who's great in it?
Dolly.
Well, Dolly's great in all the time, but... Durning, Charles Durning. He's got a dance number in there that is just fantastic. I think he got an Oscar nomination for supporting actor for that movie. Corey Feldman. Oh, man. If you've noticed 80s star Corey Feldman's name trending lately, it's due to a couple of odd live musical performances he put on for the Today Show. While the fallen star definitely began his career in front of the camera, he began landing some television roles back in the late 70s. He did try to make a go of it in his musical career, dating all the way back to 1992's Love Left. And he's still trying. Some people have called his latest album Angelic to the Core, with the number two, Angelic to the Core.
I have been pitying fools for 28 years, Bill, and it's never personal.
Is the year's worst album. His attempts, both professionally and one incredibly embarrassing performance he concocted for his ex-wife in an episode of the reality show The Two Corys, haven't fared much better. And then finally, Shaq.
Yeah.
Shaquille O'Neal. Yes, Shaquille O'Neal is best known as a superstar athlete, but don't try telling fans that of Kazam. Or the... Kazam. Or the users of Icy Hot, Gold Bond, and dozens of other products that Shaq has endorsed over the years. Now he's hanging out, as I mentioned, he's hanging out with the General now. He and the General are buddies.
Him and Snoop.
Snoop is hanging out with the General. He's hanging out with a hip crowd. The General's a hip dude.
Yeah, surprising for a short, squat white guy.
With a massive beard.
Yeah.
Or a mustache. That's a Wilford Brimley.
Maybe it is Wilford Brimley.
So who's the coach of the Chiefs? Paul Reed? Is that his name?
Andy Reid.
Okay, do you know what they were posting online all over the place? Was pictures of Wilford Brimley saying congratulations on winning the Super Bowl. But in the early 90s, Shaq added rapper to his repertoire and gave music fans the platinum album known as Shaq Diesel. I remember hearing this. Do we have any of Shaq? Shaq Diesel? If it was a platinum album, though, come on, man.
Shaq D. What year was that? I mean, it had to be
early 90s.
Oh, man.
Do we know if he swears on this? Because the last time we... Well, he made a shout out to Cuba Gooden. Shaq. Yeah. Shaq.
I can't believe he would swear.
What, Shaq?
Yeah, not like a song. You know, he's got a pretty squeaky clean image most of the time.
Shaq?
All right.
I told you about the time my ex-wife and I saw him.
Yeah.
He had a full-length leather jacket. This is when he was with the Orlando Magic. Full-length leather jacket with a patch on the back of the Earth, and it said, Shaq, I rule the world. And he's monster. He's a monster. It was funny. We took a picture. My ex-wife was about 5 feet tall, maybe 5'1". And she went up. He was at the bar. And she went up and just like, kind of stood next to him. Seriously, was like right up, just about up to his hip. All right. Well, there you go. Some actors who tried to make a go of it in the world of music. All right. Get in here now. We want you to call 312-981-7200. First two people through will be our contestants for Know Your Onion. So call in right now. First two people in here now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you know the difference between a real newspaper headline and an Onion newspaper headline, you could win. 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. Welcome back, we are here. It's Nick DiGilio continuing the Nick DiGilio Show, 312-981-7200. We've got Blackhawks Express that we're going to play in a little bit, and we'll wrap up the show with catching up on some of the texts and stuff that have come through about some of the things we've been talking about this morning right here on WGN. Who requested the George Harrison?
It's coming to us from Michael.
All right. Great song.
Well, probably my favorite solo Beatles song.
Is that right?
Yeah, because like Dan Shugru, I'm a massive fan of George Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Never got the credit he deserved. Got totally held back as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And then he releases All Things Must Pass. And
yeah.
It's just genius.
Yeah, I'm a Paul guy.
Nerd.
Yeah, I'm a Paul guy. Sorry.
Silly love songs.
I love that song. I love Wings. I love that band. I really do. So... anyway, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and every Wednesday morning, around 3:30, we bust out the phone lines, and we play a little game called Know Your Onion. Tom is your host, and he will read a series of news headlines, and you must decide whether they are real or they are from the satirical comedy fake news, The Onion. So are we ready to start this?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
It's always fantastic when the band comes in and the 60,000 people come in with them every
it's
week.
Remarkable.
It's amazing.
Stuff.
We're very crowded in this Skyline studio at this point. All right. So we all know how it works, correct? And we have our we got our players. Our first player is Al. How you doing, Al?
How you doing?
All right. You know The Onion?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you just have to guess whether a news headline is real or from The Onion. If you get the majority of them correct, you are a winner. Okay. Tom?
All right, Al. Your first headline here. Jared Kushner promises that his Israel plan will relocate all Palestinians to a generous swath of the Mediterranean Sea. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm with The Onion.
Well, let's see. Very good.
Yeah. Come on.
All right.
That's... okay. All right. Good job. Right out of the gate, you got one right, Al.
Thank you.
A couple more and you win. Here we go.
All right. Your next headline, Al. Let's head on over to the Iowa caucus, where a Pete Buttigieg supporter asks to take back her vote after learning that he's gay. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I believe that's real.
Well, let's see.
Woo-hoo!
Very good. That is super real.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's coming to us from The Hill. In the two-minute clip of an interaction between a Buttigieg supporter and one of the campaign members, the caucus-goer is heard asking, "Are you saying that he has a same-sex partner?" When she's told yes, that Buttigieg is married to a man, she tells the woman that it is common knowledge after the caucus goer says she had never heard that before.
Jeez.
Yeah. I feel like that's...
Oh, man.
You should probably know that if you're a caucus goer, but... You know.
Oh, man. All right. That's depressing.
That's what happens when you raucous out with your caucus out.
It's depressing. All right. All right, Al. Nice job. Two in a row. All you need is one more, and you are our winner.
All right.
All right. Let's go over to the sports world. Super Bowl victorious Patrick Mahomes thanks the Bears for drafting Mitchell Trubisky. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion.
Let's see.
Excellent!
No, I wish that were real.
Yeah. I would love to hear Patrick Mahomes say
that. I so wish that were real. That is hilarious. Man, nice job. You set him up and you knocked him right down. 1, 2, 3, Al.
All right, thanks.
Very cool. All right, man. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Hold the line, Al, okay?
All right.
All right, you hang on there. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, good job, Al.
Right out of the gate, man.
The man knows his
news.
Not even
messing around, man.
I love it.
All right. We ready for our second contestant?
Let's go.
All right. This is Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Kind of tired, but I go through this every night with you guys.
Okay. Do you know The Onion?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you know how to play the game? And Tom?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right. Linda, your first headline. Whiskey cured my coronavirus, says Wuhan-based Brit who contracted the deadly flu. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's an onion.
Let's see. Ooh, that's very real.
Really?
That's real?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, that's coming to us from, of all places, The Scotsman.
Uh-huh.
One of the national newspapers of Scotland. The North Wales native said that he feared he was at death's door before turning to a traditional flu remedy, the humble hot toddy. He said he used the inhaler to help control his cough and drank a hot whiskey with honey until that ran out. It's an old-fashioned remedy, but it seemed to do the trick.
He drank that until it ran out?
Yep, he thought he was going to die. He seriously thought he was going to die, but he managed to beat the coronavirus with a hot toddy.
Until it ran out. What are we talking about? Are we talking about a fifth?
Well, a hot toddy. You've had a hot toddy before.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so he just kept drinking hot whiskey with honey until he was done, until he ran out of whiskey.
Oh, God.
Again, the Scotsman.
I was going to say, a Scotsman's not going to...
Welsh.
He's Welsh.
He's
okay,
Welsh.
A Welshman's not going to run out of whiskey.
No.
First of all, that's...
I never heard that one.
All right, Linda. One wrong, but you still got some chance here. All right, Tom?
All right, let's go to your next headline. The Democratic National Convention offers startup $500 million to develop a pencil that can accurately record election results. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's an onion.
Very good.
Very good.
Nick, you can't laugh.
I'm sorry.
You're giving it away.
I'm sorry, but I mean that's ridiculous. That's hilarious.
It is. It is very funny.
When did they post that?
The Onion?
That headline. Do you
this
know when?
They had
to have posted. I mean, they had
right
to have posted. Okay.
Yeah. All that's right. That's a fresh headline. That's a fresh onion.
Okay. All right, Linda. One and one. Here we go.
All right. Your next headline, Linda. The Russian Orthodox Church thinks it might be time to stop blessing nukes. Is that real or is that The Onion?
To stop blessing nukes?
Yeah, nuclear weapons.
That's got to be an onion.
Well, let's see. Ooh, that is very real.
Serious? I never heard of such a thing.
That's real?
Yeah, that's coming to us from CTV. The Russian Orthodox Church has proposed a stop to the practice of having priests bless weapons of mass destruction, though sprinkling holy water on planes and ships is still deemed appropriate. They believe it. The gesture bestows divine protection.
Okay. All right. Now, Linda, you got to get the next one right. If you get another one wrong, then you're out.
That's okay, but I've never heard of that one before.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Let's move on. All right. Next headline: a man accused of keeping an attack squirrel is set to appear in Limestone County Court. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to say that's
Let's see. Very real.
Of course that's real.
It's coming to us from WHNT, Alabama.
Of course.
The man who Limestone County authorities said may have fed a pet squirrel meth to make it aggressive
Oh, God.
Was scheduled to appear in court. 36-year-old Mickey Polk will face a Limestone County judge on a possession of a wild animal. During his arraignment back in July. Yeah, should have given him a hot toddy. He pleaded not guilty to the charge of having an attack squirrel hopped up on meth.
Uh-huh.
So, take that as you will.
All right. Very good. You got to get one more right?
One more.
Yep, one more.
Okay.
All right, Linda, your next headline. An Ottawa businessman tells incredulous judge that he burned $1 million in cash to keep it from his ex-wife. Is that real or is that The Onion?
No, I believe that's real.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Whoa!
Way to come back. Way to come back, Linda.
Yeah, but was it real money or Monopoly money?
It was entirely real money. That's coming to us from the Ottawa Citizen. The 55-year-old Ottawa businessman and failed mayoral candidate sold properties and businesses behind his wife's back, then withdrew the $1 million and, as he claims, burned the money in two bonfires, $743,000 on September 23rd and $296,000 on December 15th, totaling $1 million.
Wow.
How's that,
is that
for
Ottawa, Canada?
Ottawa, Canada. That's avoiding alimony like I've never seen before.
Amazing. Linda, very nice. Very nice job coming back from behind. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station. By the way, speaking of weather stations, Tom, we get the weather? We totally forgot about the weather. I'm going to do the weather in a couple of minutes here. Anyway, you got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. You got to hold the line, okay, Linda?
All right. Thanks,
all right, hold on. Everybody hold on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And if you want to text us some stuff in, we're going to wrap up the show here. And we've got a Blackhawks Express to play. From last night's game, they did not win, but it was an exciting game. They made a comeback in the third period, and they actually got to send it to overtime. But we'll hear all the action and the calls as we play. Tom? Why don't we jump into that right now? Let's play the Blackhawks Express from last night's game. Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN. More Clampton. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from David.
All right, David, there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We were talking about famous actors who also took a crack at music. There's a lot more.
Oh, there's a million.
Juliette Lewis.
Ooh.
And I saw her. I saw Juliette Lewis in the Licks.
What was that like?
That was great.
Okay.
She's a great front person. She's great. And she's also, you know, I love her in Strange Days.
Yeah, she's got a great energy.
And she does a fantastic version of I Can Hardly Wait, the PJ Harvey song, in Strange Days. She's great.
She does another really popular cover in that. Or maybe that's the only song we see her do.
That's the only song you see her do. Yeah. I've seen that.
I remember hearing it and being like, wow, that's
she's really good.
Very good.
How about Zooey Deschanel?
Of course.
What is it? What's it? Her,
she and him.
Him and her?
She and him.
Okay. Pretty popular, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. I like her.
Yeah, she seems nice.
Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman can sing.
Huge jacked man?
Yeah. I love Hugh Jackman.
Well, he's like classically trained, too. He does the stage and everything.
You know what? The deal with Hugh Jackman is he's one of those guys that can do anything. Like, seriously. He's good at every single thing he does. He can sing, he can dance, he can do comedy, he can do drama. You know what movie was on yesterday morning when I got home and I watched a little bit of it? Have you seen the movie Prisoners?
Yeah.
I love that movie. That's Denis Villeneuve. Gyllenhaal's fantastic in it too. Jackman's great in it. Hugh Jackman's great in that movie. Oh, but nobody mentioned Jamie Foxx.
Oh, yeah.
Blame it on the alcohol.
Was he? He was an actor first, mainly comedian, right?
Stand up and in Living Color.
Yeah,
that's basically where he got. That's where he got his start. But I mean, you know, he was on that Gold Digger song
mm-hmm.
with what's his face,
Kanye West,
right?
Well, because that's when Ray came out,
right? Oh yeah,
because he did his own
singing in Ray.
Yeah, yeah.
How about Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yikes.
Yeah, she sings.
When she's not ruining everyone's lives with that dumb website. Goop.
Goopy. All right, how about this one? Nobody mentioned Jared Leto and 30 Seconds to Mars.
Better left unsaid. Remarkably bad. Remarkably bad band.
But that's where you knew him from, right? You didn't know him?
No, I did not know him as an actor.
You didn't know him as Jordan Catalano?
No, someone had to explain that to me, because 30 Seconds to Mars was quite popular when I was in about middle school.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, who is this guy?
It's Jordan Catalano.
Yeah. Well, and then someone was like, oh, he's in Fight Club. I'm like, what do you mean he's in Fight Club?
Yeah, he's in Fight Club.
I just couldn't believe how much older he was than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought he was still kind of like maybe in his 20s.
I mean, Jordan Catalano was for a character, the character he played, for people who don't know, the character he played in My So-Called Life with Claire Danes, and I was obsessed with that show. What about Amy Adams? Amy Adams can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Lea Michele?
From Glee. Now she's just in wedding planning commercials.
Is that all she's doing?
That's the only thing I've seen her in.
About Richard Gere? Chicago?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he didn't really release any albums, did he? He didn't, like, go for the full music career.
No, I don't think
he's
so.
He's good in Chicago.
But he's very good in Chicago.
Yeah.
We mentioned Kevin Bacon.
Bacon Brothers.
And his brother. How about Evan Rachel Wood? Across the Universe, man.
Mm-hmm. No, I know. Oh, yeah.
She's got a great voice. I love her in Across the Universe. Well, I love that movie. Like, I'm one of six people who like that movie. I caught so much hell. I put that movie on my top 10 list the year it came out. Julie Andrews.
Oh, yeah. Also a writer.
Yeah. Renee Zellweger.
Also Chicago, right?
Yeah.
I can't think of what else she might have sang. Oh, well,
what are you talking about? She's in Judy.
I forgot about Judy. I didn't see Judy, so.
Scarlett Johansson. She sings. How about James Marsden? He's in
Cyclops.
He's in a band.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman. She sang in Moulin Rouge. Russell Crowe, we all know about the 30-odd grunts. Jada Pinkett Smith. Jada, she can sing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. How about Johnny Depp?
Oh, yeah, he's got, like, he had a band with Alice Cooper, I think, at one point, the Hollywood Vampires, and Keith Richards.
Right. Well, he hung out with Keith Richards and basically patterned his performance in the Pirates of the Caribbean on him.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix can sing.
Mm-hmm. Walk the line.
We've got Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. So, lots.
Yeah, it makes your career a little bit easier.
Yeah. Penelope Cruz. So, well, there you go. We were talking about actors and actresses who took a crack at the music business. Some of them failed, others did very well. But there's so many. I mean, I was just looking through, and it's surprising just how many actors and actresses do sing. So, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Kevin Powell from the Rokan Show here in WGN. We're going to talk sports with him.